Hello, fellow homebrewers. JP here, and I want to introduce to you the brand new Brewbuilt X1 Conical Series available at More Beer. More Beer sells the highest standard in homebrewing equipment, and the Brewbuilt Conicals are just that. They're made from mirror-polished 304 stainless steel, and they come with loads of features that you and I have been looking for. They have a full 2-inch bottom dump valve, which will eliminate your clogging issues, while the sturdy base includes 4 reinforced legs, just like those big pro tanks do. More Beer also carries the Brewbuilt line of options and add-ons like casters, pressure kits, and even external glycol chillers. So you can find out more about the new Brewbuilt X1 conical uni tanks by going over to morebeer.com for detailed videos on the entire line of Brewbuilt conicals. You can trust Brewbuilt with your next fermentation, and you can trust More Beer to find the right conical for you. Brewbuilt at morebeer.com.
Want to be one of the best brewers there is.
I stopped dressing all in plastic.
You better be brewing 5 to 6 times a week.
A beer, every beer, is made with love, and it begs to be appreciated.
I need something to kill the salmonella I'm kind of worried about in the eggs.
Do you find that that the hops kind of clash with the chicken embryo you put in there? Well,
I might sleep here tonight.
It's a California king. There's plenty of room for both of us, Beavis. Right.
How many of the brewers over there have seen your ass?
That's it. Someone's getting cut tonight.
I have to say is, hey, McDonald, how you doing?
Now, live from the Brewing Network Studios in Northern California, this is the radio program for home brewers, craft brewers, beer lovers, and beer geeks. It's your only source for live beer radio that brings expert brewers together with, well, expert drinkers. This is the radio program with a head on it. This is The Session.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to The Session. I'm your host, Justin Crosley, and for the first time in a long time, we are not broadcasting live from the Brewing Network Studios in Concord, California. We're in an entirely different studio. My new studio, I think.
It's an upgrade, finally.
We are actually broadcasting live from the brand new brewery in Windsor, California. It's the Russian River Brewery. And not just that, we're up in the Cool Ship Room, which we'll dive right into what a cool ship is. Don't worry, we're going to explain all that to you today. But it is a very unique and awesome experience. And my guests today, Natalie and Vinny Chilurzo, welcome to my studio.
Welcome to our brewery.
Yeah. Welcome, Justin. It's nice to be in your Cool Ship Room at our brewery.
I have taken it over for at least the next couple hours.
We designed this for you.
Thank you for that. I'm actually liking the sound in it. You know, we did a site visit just the other day, me and Vinny walking through to see where to broadcast, and of course, I walked in here, and it's just so beautiful that I said, well, this is where I want to be. But we were a little worried about the echo or the sound.
And the humidity.
And the humidity.
I was worried about that.
Which is great for my hair. I'm liking it right now.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Co-host today, Beardy and Teresa are with us, also in the Cool Ship Room studio thing.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for the hop grenade to come up. You haven't put enough hop grenades up yet.
I know. Well, because the whole room is bare. There's no paint. There's no logos. There's nothing. And even the brand whore that I am feels like I should leave this one alone.
Natural?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This one has to stay natural. Yeah.
But I did spot one random Allagash bottle up there.
Yeah. That's a special bottle.
Yes. Yeah, so I figured it must have been.
Yeah, that's an Allagash Cantillon Russian River collaboration.
Okay. Oh,
okay. It belongs.
Yeah. And I wore my t-shirt today.
And Wild Natalie's wearing the same
Friendship
ring. Yep.
Okay.
Nice.
Let me take care of a little bit of business before we just dive into everything. First of all, I'm going to take some video of this entire Cool Ship Room and put it up on our YouTube page. So as we're talking today about the different parts of this room, you're going to be able to go back and look at this. Now, I'm going to post this show as quickly as I can. It might take me just a couple more days to get the video up, but it'll be on the youtube.com/brewingnetwork. You can go check check that out, or just search Brewing Network, and I'll just that way you can see it. But on today's live show, on our live stream page, where we're streaming right now, you can also just go and look, and we gave the cool ship its own camera. So every time we talk about the cool ship today, we're going to switch to the cool ship cam.
Right.
You know, and listen, who deserves to be famous more than that cool ship?
The cool ship.
Yeah.
That's it.
That's it.
I thought it was for the belly flop competition later.
Well, all right, I'm going to go into that a little bit later, because I did have some, I was more worried for Vinny than anything. We're going to talk about this in a little bit. Let me just make sure I take care of some business here today. I want to thank our sponsor, More Beer, who brings you this session and every session. You go to morebeer.com. They've been doing that since before we ever even started, back in 2005. And Chris Graham and Olin over there at More Beer, Darren, I want to say that another proud moment for me was walking through the brand new brewery here in Windsor and still finding a place for the More Beer brew sculpture that Vinny uses.
Yep. And we just brewed on it last week.
You did.
Employee Brew Day, National Homebrew Day or something was last week or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, we, Zach, our lead brewer, led a brew. 15 of our front of the house employees.
So I shouldn't be surprised, because their sculptures are so cool, but there just was something, I don't know, strange or unique about walking through this entire brewery that is just state of the art. We're going to learn about it. And then looking over and going, in a perfect corner, by the way, with its own tile floor and drains, is the More Beer brew sculpture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well done.
We still use it.
Love
all
it.
The time.
So
love
thanks,
that thing.
Thanks to our longtime sponsor, and good job on that. And I want to point out, you might get to win a brew sculpture if you go to the Brewing Network anniversary party. We're going to be celebrating 14 years at the Homebrewers Conference at HomebrewCon. We're putting on BNA 14. And More Beer had built a sculpture, and it was given or sold to Jamil, who now owns Heretic Brewing Company. But back in the day, he was a home brewer, and he made it his mission to win an award in every single category of beer. And he did it on this More Beer system. And then he ended up writing Brewing Classic Styles, a great book with beer recipes based on this, what he brewed on this system. Then, God knows why, he gave it to me. So it got handed down, and I've had it for years, and I've brewed some beers on it, but it's, I'm going to be honest, been collecting some dust for a little while.
Yeah. How's your quality?
Your goal has been to never win an award on the system.
Yes, yeah.
And my, you've done it.
My goal was to just brew one goddamn drinkable beer on the thing. Well, now we're going to refurb it one more time, and we feel like it should stay in the family. So one lucky Brewing Network listener is going to get to win the More Beer sculpture that's getting passed around the Brewing Network.
It's like the rare barrel. It's like pH 1 of homebrew.
It is. Yes.
It's like the pH 1 of homebrew skid.
Shit, I got to think of a good name. It's sort of like pH 1, but a little more fucked up. I'm going to go to work on that. Let me see what I can come up with. So anyhow, all you're going to have to do for that is go to HomebrewCon, buy yourself some raffle tickets, and then go to BNA 14. I'll be putting tickets up for BNA 14 for sale this week. I know I said that last week, but it will happen this week because it has to.
The show's posting in a month.
Exactly. Okay, so do that. And then I also want to mention, just while we're talking about events, Drake's Brewing Company is having a great event. It's one of my favorites. It's their Session Beer Festival. It's happening May 25th. It's from 1 to 5 p.m. in Jack London Square. And that's a great fest. You can go and you can drink like I do and still be able to walk home. Because
unlike
it's Session
you.
Beer Fest, right? Yeah. So that's May 25th. You can go to drinkdrakes.com and check it all out.
Glad we have a lot of Session beers in the fermenter right now.
Yeah.
Perfect timing.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Are you guys going to be pouring at Session Fest as well?
Yeah, we normally do.
Do you know what beers you're going to send down there already?
Not what Ben's has planned, but I'm thinking what's in the fermenter right now. We've got Dribble Belt, our low-gravity hoppy session beer. It's kind of a session IPA, 4.25% alcohol.
Nice.
And then one of my favorite Belgian beers we do is in the one of the fermenters at the pub, Scratching Post.
Okay.
And it's sort of my tip-the-hat nod to Taurus Bulba, one of my favorite Belgian beers. It's
That's a good beer.
Yeah, it's a beautiful beer. And so Scratching Post is this really water chemistry-forward beer that's got this really dryness to it. but it's only 4.25%, 4.5% alcohol. Pretty hop forward, dry hopped. It's got a firm bitterness, so unlike, you know, the assault on bitterness in America right now. By
sure.
Small breweries are like, I don't like bitter beer.
Yeah.
And I love bitterness still.
You do.
Like, to me, it's still like a really important part and flavor component of beer. And, I love that in Taurus Bulba or XX Bitter, and that low alcohol, you know, that 4.5% to 6% out, the 6% style of Belgian blonde beer. That's what Scratching Post is.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to have to talk about this. You're going to have to explain to me, like, what bitterness means to you, because I'm one of these people who will frequently say, yeah, I'm not all about the bitterness, but I love the hop character and aroma and all that. However, I love your beers. Blind Pig is one of my favorites, but it's because I consider that bitterness to be different. It's not harsh. It doesn't beat me up. But you're saying it's a firm, damn firm bitterness.
Yeah.
So we're going to have to get into that.
I look forward to it.
Okay. All right.
Good thing we brought our beds.
Yeah. We literally did.
We literally did.
We drove my bed. It's,
it's out in the parking lot.
Right.
Yeah.
Poor Vinny and Natalie didn't know what they were getting into. They're like, you want to do a show at the brewery? Fuck yeah. 5 days later.
Trying to get rid of us.
Justin, you got to move that thing. It's time to go.
Show's over. Monday. It was over Monday.
I did warn. I warned Vinny. I said, like, I'm going to bring the RV. I might just sleep in the parking lot. He was all right with it.
I said, go for it.
2 acres.
Just the parking lot is. Let's do this. Let's just start talking about this brewery. So just the parking lot is 2 acres, right? Mm-hmm. What's the property?
It's about 15 acres total.
Wow. Okay.
But we have 4 acres of protected wetlands. So Vinny and I own that. And it is legally protected, so we're not allowed to build on it.
Wow.
For environmental reasons, which we're totally fine with that. So that's on the west end of the property.
Okay.
So we have, there's wetlands out there, so there's like natural ponds and a lot of wild birds. So
I saw it. It's beautiful.
It is beautiful.
Can I ask you a business question about that? If it's legally protected, meaning not only you can't build on it, but neither can anybody else, mm-hmm. why'd you buy it?
So nobody would build on it.
Because they could change the law later or something?
Like, it was part of the package. It was part of the whole property.
Okay.
But we wanted it because that way we could protect it regardless of what happens with environmental laws in the future.
Okay.
So that's basically, it's our backyard, if you will.
Yeah.
So the beer garden and the pub and everything orients itself to the west and looks out over the wetlands. And that's what we wanted.
It's also a nice buffer because there's 500 houses or whatever to the west. So it's really good for that too. And it's beautiful.
I mean,
during after the rains, there's just birds flying everywhere and swooping in, and there's egrets and geese and ducks, and it was fun.
And even like some of the brewery looks out over it. I was standing up on the very top of the brewery when you walk up the spiral staircase, and you can just look out. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
It's
really cool.
Now
he built a duck blind. He built a duck blind in the corner of the brewery, so that way he can just get dinner later.
And by the way, nothing is free.
All right.
They told us, we're giving you the 4 acres. We're throwing it in.
So
nothing's free.
That's kind of what I was getting at. Like, you can't build on it. Neither can anybody else. Meanwhile, that'll be $800 a square foot or whatever.
Yeah,
I wish.
We didn't pay for the 4 acres, but all the legal fees of all the protection, the mitigation, all that.
I understand.
We paid handsomely for the rest of it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So are you allowed to have any like hiking paths out there?
No.
Not at all.
Nothing. No animals, no dogs are allowed.
Yep.
No dogs are a big one. They don't want dogs taking a dump out there. Good call.
And leaving things that might grow
or
something. Because we have coyotes out there too. So
okay.
Yeah, we've had. They're wild.
They're natural,
but they're wild.
Yeah.
So. Plus, they don't have shitty owners. Let's be honest. It's not the dog's fault. It's the owner. If owners would clean up after themselves and their dogs, it would probably not be a thing.
It's the same thing as kids.
Yeah, pretty much. Now, did you look a long time for a property like this, or did this fall in your lap? Like, how did you find this spot, and what were you looking for?
Well, we had a kind of an idea of the design of the brewery, but we really couldn't couldn't complete the design of the brewery until we knew the shape of the property.
Okay.
So we looked at properties that were really long and skinny, and we looked at properties that were centrally square, and we looked at properties that were weird.
L-shaped
and just weird stuff. And so in Sonoma County, we were pretty limited. Mm. I mean, we really honestly kept looking at the same four or five properties. And one of our conditions was that we wanted to own. We didn't want to lease.
Smart.
We wanted to be in charge of our own destiny.
Yeah.
So we really had a hard time finding property that somebody was willing to sell to us, because, you know, the owners of the property were more than happy to develop it and
sure.
lease it to you for a long period of time and then have an option to buy it, but that's not what we wanted. And so we did look at this property. The owners were not interested in selling it, and so we walked away. And so then we ended up in contract on another piece of property down the street.
Okay.
Our spent grain farmer, actually. So the guy who's been picking up spent grain since Vinny was out of Corbell
okay.
days. And so he's an old, longtime friend of ours, and he and his family were planning to sell the farm, and so we ended up in contract on like half of that farm, but because of environmental issues, we had to pull out because it was, you know, we were going to pay a lot of money for a piece of property that was only about 40% developable.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't
mm-hmm.
enough space for us. So,
I see.
But during that process, the town of Windsor got really excited about Russian River Brewing Company coming to their town.
Okay.
And because this is essentially a bedroom community. I mean, there's a lot of great businesses here, but they really kind of wanted a big project to come here. And so I think they did help us inevitably being able to purchase this property.
Talk the owner a little yeah. into maybe this is a good move.
This would be yeah. a good move for everybody in the community. Yeah. And the owners are, they're very, you know, the previous owners are reasonable people. They live here. They own a lot of properties.
Respected in the business community here.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. So they
were just looking out for their own financial decisions.
Yeah. Well, sure. Yeah. yeah, exactly. So they did agree to sell it to us.
Okay.
And so we were then off to the races.
Now, you looked Sonoma County. Like, how far did you look?
Mainly
Santa
North.
Rosa.
You wanted to be near
airport,
yeah.
The airport, which is just now a mile south of us, and then here in Windsor.
A little bit in southwest
Santa
Rosa,
but not
like
much.
Dutton yeah. area, a little bit. Yeah. But the serious looking was more like airport business center,
mm-hmm.
and then up here, because we really needed a minimum of 10 acres to accomplish what we were looking to do.
Okay.
So, yeah.
I liked it up here, too, because it put us more like closer to all the wineries.
Oh, yeah.
To the Russian River, to Dry Creek, and it just felt right to
okay.
be north. Mm-hmm. And then once we had identified the four pieces of property, three by the airport and then this one, we just kept going back and forth.
Wow.
And yeah. and it was a lot of it was the owners, I don't want to say trying to screw us, but they were trying to take advantage of us price-wise.
Interesting,
and
yeah.
It was, you know, and then the last day, all four pieces were available.
Oh,
at the
suddenly.
Last minute.
So
suddenly.
Then you had your pit. Now you're
yeah.
in charge.
Yeah. And we, yeah. But we stuck with this one because it felt right. It was.
It had good feng shui.
Yeah. And it had yeah. a lot of good functionality. Like, for instance, we had visited tons of breweries. I mean, of course, we've always visited breweries throughout
right.
our lives. But you look at a brewery differently when you're going to build something like this. Mm-hmm. And like, one of the things we saw at several breweries, they're pretty good sized breweries, like having the truck entrance and the customer entrance in the same area, the same parking lot. And we just mm-hmm. didn't want that.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted them separate. So that's one of the things we love about this property mm-hmm. is that all our guests come in on the north side and
yeah.
all the trucks and employees park on the south side.
Very nice.
And that's really, it seems inconsequential to the average consumer, but it's really nice functionally.
And they would notice it if it was different.
Yeah.
Does that make
yeah.
sense? Like, the fact that they don't notice it, that it's inconsequential, means it's working, that
yeah.
you did it right.
Right. right.
Because
yeah.
they might go to another place and go, God, why are these trucks driving past me? It wasn't
yeah.
like that at Russian River. Like, they won't know till it's
right.
gone.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Absolutely.
You brought up a detail, like, when you're buying a piece of property, the shape of it. Mm-hmm. Is there a shape that you think is more universally better than others? Like, what were you looking for when you had the choice of four different
every piece of property we looked at? I still have a brewery layout that I made for that property.
Okay.
So we do have a layout for everything
the
we
L,
did.
The
yeah,
square.
Even the L, we have a layout for that in my computer.
So somewhere. There's no ideal. It's just making the way you wanted the brewery to be laid out fit the property.
I think we wanted a rectangular because we wanted to, just like our building is kind of rectangular, we wanted to tell the story of beer and how it's made, and we wanted it to be very sequential, you know, brew house, you know, yeast, fermentation, bright beer,
right,
packaging, and then also, and that's not only from an operational standpoint, but also from a tourist standpoint, a customer experience standpoint, to tell, like I just said, the story of beer, how's beer made.
Yeah.
And like, we didn't want to, the building could have been a lot smaller if we would have made it, shaped it differently and done it. But the way to absolutely say how beer is made, it had to be just become this long building to have beer, this linear process.
Okay. So. All right. And it is. It's like it's very linear. You go all the way down the building. You can see everything happening in sequence. There's a self-guided tour that you can take, or there are private tours you can sign up for as well.
Guided tours. Yep.
And I do have to say,
which you get to come into the cool ship.
On the guided tour?
The guided tour. Only the guided tour.
You don't want these scoundrels in here. On self-guided tour. Well, and I'm going to say this, and I hope you don't mind, and I hope you know it comes from a place that we've grown up together, and I once had a studio in a garage.
I remember.
But now that and this is why I feel like I can say this. Seeing the new brewery. Now I've been with you guys the whole time. The pub first, and I watched the barrel room grow at the pub as much as it could grow, and then the production brewery. And now this is your new production brewery. And seeing this one, I have to say your last production brewery is kind of a shithole. And I'm sure you have a fondness for it, as it's gotten you where it has, just like my garage.
Yeah, your garage is a shithole too.
Yeah, I know. This is why I know I can say this. And by the way, my garage was about this temperature every time we did a show. I know that we have this fondness for where we've come from, but you must also feel like I've built the place I always wanted, right?
Yes.
You know,
yes.
And like, it's nice to leave some of that behind.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You go back to your old brewery and we look at it and it's like, wow.
Like, right.
We cranked out a lot of beer.
Yeah. But you know what? It was a really great beer that came out of there. We won awards and we sold everything.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to like not forget that.
I agree.
And like, you shouldn't ever forget those hard days. Those are the days that keep you grounded. And I'll never forget the one time we were up in Chico, and it was, I think it was Labor Day weekend, and we were up staying with Brian Grossman for a long weekend. Mm-hmm. And one day we went over to Ken and Katie's house, Brian's parents, and we were down at the swimming hole. I remember Ken and Natalie talking business, and Natalie said, I just stopped having to check the bank balance every day.
Right.
We finally have enough money in the bank. And I remember Ken like just going into like yesterday. I remember that.
Yeah, yeah.
And then they talked about it, and like, he never forgot that. And Natalie certainly has never forgotten those days. And we don't, you know, I still remember Blind Pig and plastic fermenters and all that. So yeah, Ferdinand Court was much different than this facility.
And that's okay. But, you know, I think that most people who do become very successful, they do have not just a nostalgia, but a respect for all the things you had to do to get here. There are others in the world who just sort of get handed a place like this, right? Or whatever business it might be in. And I think that it's different when you've really kind of scratched and clawed and worked for it, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you guys must have some sense of accomplishment when you come here in the morning, knowing where you've been and where you are now.
Yeah, I think one of the most important things is that we did it on our own. Mm-hmm. You know, that we worked really hard to buy out 30 investors and two business partners and get out from under, you know, being beholden to anybody but ourselves. And we started this whole project debt-free, investor-free, and with a very clear vision as to what we wanted to accomplish. And I think, you know, we have many, many friends who have business partners, and that's great, and that's what works for them. But for me and Vinny, we were just adamant about being independent and doing this on our own and doing it our way or the highway.
Do you now take time to feel that accomplishment? I'm a person who, I'm always like, what's next? Like, I get there and I'm like, cool, what's next? What am I, or did you get here and really sort of, you know, brush off your shoulders and go, we did it? Right. Like, we did it.
Yeah, we did it. We built it, but now we're trying to figure out how to drive it.
Right.
Yep. Well, I mean, this is, it's an 85,000 square foot building. We have over 200 employees. We have two breweries. And so, I mean, things like, you know, intangible things like company culture and, you know, communication and training and things like that. And just retaining really good employees and attracting new employees and things like that that are kind of those softer things.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, we're still also trying to figure out how to turn the lights on and off. Mostly
you didn't
off.
You didn't put in light switches? I feel like that's a mistake.
This place is too high tech.
California doesn't let you just put in light switches.
You're right.
Oh, right.
Oh, motion everything.
Motion and light sensitive also.
Light sensors. Yeah. You got to put them on the Lutron system. It has all these
dimmers and this
crap.
And that.
It's like, are you kidding me? I just want to, it's the HVAC system. I mean, if I have any employees who work here who are listening right now, they're rolling their eyes because our HVAC system has been a nightmare. It has a brain. The HVAC system has a brain that is dysfunctional.
Oh, no.
And,
like most brains are.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, and in the middle of service, you know, all of a sudden the heater will come on a warm day.
No.
Like, and then it's like they can't do anything because it's in the centralized brain. And so then...
It's not like, it's not a thermostat in the corner.
No. Just give me a knob.
Yeah. I want old school.
Right?
Like the one in your grandma's house?
Yes.
That's what I want.
Yeah, just move that little lever.
Yeah.
Like
Oh, sure, it's off by 4 degrees one way or the other, but at least you know.
When the TV remote was a big box that you hit those clunky buttons on.
And move the ears and put some foil
on them. Yeah. Those were the days.
Getting back to your question, though, I would say for me, I'm done right now with the next. And I think the next is just we have some phase two things. Like, we're putting in a pilot brewery. So we just got the pilot. I think you saw the room.
I did.
The brew pub.
Yeah.
So we're putting in a new little 5-barrel pilot brewery, which I think is coming either this month or next month. So that's kind of the next. We were not able to finish building out one of the open top fermenter rooms. So that's part of our next.
Okay.
So we do have a lot of next things coming, but here.
There's a lot of phase two and phase three.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's okay to do it in a project this size. You almost have to.
The important thing is to pick the things that can be easily done.
Yeah.
Like for instance, I was showing some of your crew around earlier, and I forgot to mention the purple pipe, which is so we have the wastewater here. The wastewater system for all the brewery effluent goes out to our wastewater system, and we process it. And normally, once it's done, you would just dump it back into the town, the municipality's sewer line.
Yeah.
And then they would take it, whether how dirty or clean it is, and maybe you pay a charge, if it's dirtier or clean. It's really clean when it comes out. Well, we collect that, and then we run it through filters and reverse osmosis, and then we bring that water back in. And that's all the cleaning water for the brewing here. All the CAP water is reclaimed water from our wastewater system, not toilets, of course.
Yeah.
So, anyways, you could do that later, but it was a lot cheaper to install it now.
That makes sense.
And then the purple pipe is recycled water from the town. And that we plumbed to all the restrooms for all the toilets.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
So it turns out it's not quite legal yet in California.
Oh, really?
In a food facility,
but
in a restaurant.
But it was legal in your municipality. Like, the city said it was fine.
Yeah, so we're waiting.
Okay.
We're working through it. But the fact is like, that could never be done afterwards. If you think about the plumbing going to a restroom.
Yeah.
So under the building.
Under the building or whatever it is.
That's no retrofitting.
Yeah, there's no way to add that back later. So that had to be done. So even though it's not legal right now, it will become legal. Just we're in California. It's how it's going to go.
Yeah.
But we couldn't have come back and done that later. Yeah. So although it was a huge additional cost, it was an extra run of copper to every, or PAX line, whichever way we did it, mm-hmm. to every restroom, it was still, and the labor was a lot cheaper because the plumber was already doing one line. Well, he's just doing a second one.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. the material was an additional cost. But just, it couldn't have come back and done it later. So I'm glad we did it now because we got that, the sustainability part that we wanted.
Once you can use it.
We never did either. People ask us all the time, like, well, why did you do all that? You know, we're like, well, because it felt right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, well, do you save money? We never did a return on investment on all that.
On that, I bet you did.
On all that. We just did it because we wanted to.
Because we live in California and we're going to be in drought.
Yeah, at some point.
Again.
Oh,
yeah.
Eight
to 10 years or whatever. Yep. So we've lived lucky here our whole lives. We know how this goes.
Yeah. And Windsor's not a big town. It doesn't. I imagine it doesn't have a huge infrastructure for handling wastewater, and a brewery is very intensive, an intensive user of wastewater. And so did you guys have to put in a wastewater treatment facility, or was it elective?
We had already decided to, and a very expensive one, but when we met with the town, they then required it, but they were really happy to see that we had already planned for it. It was in our budget. It was in our design. We had a spot for it. So when we met with the town for the first time with this property, we already had a rough sketch. And they're like, well, there's the wastewater. Mm-hmm. And they were like, great. How far are you going to clean the water? And in technical terms, it was basically clear water with just a very light yellow tint to it.
Okay.
It's drinkable water coming off of our wastewater plant. We just elect to clean it even further so that we can then bring it in. So things like that ends up being almost goodwill to the town.
Exactly. I bet that goes a long way with the city officials.
Yeah. They go, oh, well, these guys are serious about wastewater, sustainability.
I live in Martinez. I'll drink yellow water all day long. It's fine.
I'll send you home with some in your RV.
In the RV. It won't look much different than it does now. Well, I remember it was a show a long time ago where just talking to you, you taught me that a brewery has to either pay for or treat their water. It was something that I just had never thought about. I just thought, well, you have a drain and it goes down the drain just like my bath water does, and what's done is done. And you were the one who said, No. What's done is not done. You pay for that shit.
Yeah.
So.
And the dirtier your wastewater is, the higher your sewer fees are.
Okay. Mm. Okay.
So it's advantageous cost wise.
So that is some ROI. Yeah.
That is. For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you guys know how many barrels of water you use per barrel of beer?
We haven't figured we haven't figured it out yet.
Yeah.
It's too early for us. We're only 6 months in. And so that question does come up every once in a while.
Yeah.
But we haven't even looked at it just because, like, at the startup, there's so much inefficiency.
Oh, of course.
And it's just like, I don't think we want to look at it, or we can just pass them the thermos
And try more. Yeah.
So
what are we pouring, Vinny, while we're doing this?
Yeah. You know, funny, we never talked about the first beer. That was Blind Pig off the bottling line about 4 hours ago.
We didn't talk about it because it's going to be my go-to all night.
So.
We've got time to go back to that. But four hours.
I was going
to
guess three, but you know.
Right.
Yeah. 4 hour really. Fresh Blind Pig.
Let me be exact. Okay, this was a 9:30 a.m. bottle.
Oh.
So longer than the
You can actually tell by the code what time of day.
Yeah, it was bottled on May 13th, 2019, and this was 9:29 a.m.
Oh, my gosh.
So...
I'm taking some of the RV tonight, right?
Yes.
Okay. If the RV is still there at 10 a.m., I promise I will leave. I'm just hungover.
Oh, it's okay.
It's all right. We'll bring coffee.
We're
never leaving.
We have donuts on our dessert menu.
So we could just make them for breakfast.
When does the kitchen close? 4 a.m.?
Stop at the hospitality.
The little mini growler, that's our Saison. That's Russian River Saison. It's 5.6% alcohol. And I'm a huge Saison fan, and people don't.
I don't think I've had this Saison from you much. Before.
Yeah.
Just something you've been making for
I think we waited to make it until we had the proper open top fermentation.
Yeah. I really only wanted to make Saison and open top fermenters.
Okay.
So Vinny held out for his career.
I think we made one or two like small batches at the pub, but I didn't do a great job.
Okay.
At it. Like it was good
by your standards.
By my standards. Yeah. But this, I love this beer.
Proper.
Yeah.
So what do you think it is about the open top fermenters that yield a really wonderful Saison?
I think I love like Belgian beers. I think do great in open tops because they're typically like the ones we have are 1-to-1 ratio, or sometimes they're even less than that. You know, like the What open do you mean, top fermenters?
To width?
Yeah, depth to width is they're one to one. But when you think about like the open tops at Anchor, where they make Anchor Steam, that's like. It's like, I don't know how many times wide it is to deep. It's probably like 10 times wide to one time.
At least,
deep. Yeah, where's Mark Carpenter when you need him to tell us? But
or your guy Ramon.
Or Ramon here. Right. Right. Know, yeah.
All right.
So everybody knows Ramon.
Ramon's a great, can I say, Ramon's been a friend of mine for a few years, and I came just to check the brewery out the other day, and I walk in, and Ramon brewed at Anchor for years, and he's standing in your brew house dumping yeast into the kettle, which is a fucking weird thing. We'll talk about later. I was like, Ramon, you're fucking this up, man. I don't know how long you've been here, but yeah. I was so happy to see him. And everyone does know him because he's just a lovely guy. I'm glad that he's working with you.
We love him.
We're very lucky.
Yeah,
very good.
So, okay, anyways, back to your question. So yeah, the 1-to-1 ratio. So when you have a beer that you maybe want to ferment warmer, you can ferment it warmer in an open top because you can dissipate the heat more easily. But also, you have all fermentations have byproduct. You have a fermentation byproduct. Diacetyl, acetaldehyde, all kinds of other craziness. And you can actually, and the CO2 scrubs the fermentation byproducts off, and that's just normal. So in normal fermenters that you see at most breweries, and this is no knock on a closed-top fermenter because we still make most of our beer in closed-top fermenters, but you know those are like 1 times wide by 2.5, 3, 4, 5 times tall. Mm-hmm. And so the CO2 has to travel a much farther distance as it's scrubbing out all of the fermentation byproducts. Inevitably, you won't get all of it out. Okay. Whereas an open top fermenter that says 1-to-1 ratio like ours, you've got more area to do that, and then it's got less distance to travel through. And then also, we were talking about top cropping yeast, I think, on when I was touring everyone through earlier. And the yeast is just like the most beautiful, healthy. I think it's almost smiling at us when we look at it in the microscope.
Right. It's thanking you.
Yeah. Happy little baby.
And when you think about yeast, so brewing, you knock out with your cool your wort down, and you're trying to leave all of the trub, you know, and the hop particulates and protein behind in the whirlpool, but inevitably you're going to carry some in. Mm-hmm. And a lot of breweries will go and dump the cone of the fermenter the next day to get all that out or some of it out. Inevitably, you're not going to get all of it out. And so when you ferment in a closed-top fermenter and the yeast, you know, first goes up and then it falls down. When it falls through, it's also going to capture some of the trub and whatnot that's left in the beer. And that inevitably will end up in your yeast. So long term, our goal is to top crop as much of our yeast off the open top fermenters and then repropagate it in our yeast cellar here.
And have a cleaner, more pure yeast
every time. Yeah. So we're not doing that yet, but we will at some point. That's a long term goal. And that's the other thing, like looking at a facility like this, we have so many new systems in place. I mean, dozens of new systems, and you can't you're aching to do and try all the stuff. Use the open top fermenters more. Use the yeast cellar for yeast propagation.
Right.
So on everything.
Yeah, you got a new toy.
Use the cool ship as much as possible. Yeah. And yet, you know, we've used the cool ship now, I think 12. Times open top. I think today's the 8th batch.
How long have you been producing beer here?
Since September. Yeah, September.
So you're putting
September
9th.
Okay.
Of 18. Yeah, and we opened the restaurant October 11th.
Okay.
So it's not been that long.
Sure.
But you're using
the toys.
Just got to be patient.
Yeah.
And learning too.
But how great is that? You get to now grow into your brewery.
Yeah.
In other words, a lot of times we build things because we're already a step behind. We're just catching up. But you've now leaped forward, and you get to grow into this.
Yeah. We're using our capacity very... it's not very efficient
right
now, but that's okay. We don't have to be.
Yeah.
It's nice to be able to... Like, we have one fermenter down there, one or two. They're almost just sitting empty right now. And they were a godsend when we were in commissioning, because we had several other tanks filled, and like the schedule went sideways or something didn't work or, you know, broke in commissioning. And like it didn't allow us to empty the one tank that we were going to brew into. And it's like, oh, it's cool. We have this empty one. Yeah,
sitting here,
just there.
The old brewery that would have never happened.
What was it like watching a dry hop happen in an open fermenter?
We don't dry hop in the.
Oh, you don't.
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
It would just flow.
Yeah. Oh, okay. I mean, it would eventually sink, but we only do primary fermentation in the open tops.
Okay.
Although I'm sure we'll try a dry hop in an open top fermenter at some point.
Just
like, why not?
Just because.
No one's ever seen it, right? So, well, at least I haven't.
Yeah, I mean, and the other thing, like talking about looking at your dry hops, we put a sight glass on the top of all of our fermenters here, and so we can go up, and with a flashlight you can see the hops, is you know, as you add them in.
Okay.
And pellet density is a big deal right now in the beer industry, because
sure,
like who doesn't dry hop? You know, I think Allagash even dry hops, and they're an all Belgian brewery.
Yeah,
beer.
Right.
You know?
Breweries that are going out of business don't dry. Yeah,
right. but like, yeah, I mean, it's, and so if you get hop pellets that are too dense, they'll just sink to the bottom and they won't break apart, and then you can't get anything. And yet if they're not dense enough, they may break apart and just float and never sink, because they just become powder so quickly. Mm. And so like hop density, the density of a pellet is a big deal. And so it's kind of cool to be able to go up there and look at the hops as we add them. If we add them separately, obviously we add the blend, we're not going to know. But it's just one more tool in our toolkit that we can use to make better beer.
And on the dry hop note, just speaking of like kind of old school versus new school. All right, I'm walking around this brewery with Vinny, and he's showing me like the piping just goes everywhere, right? Like they pitch yeast in line, okay,
yeah.
Right? Like it just goes. Like you can explain that better than I can. But, like things are all connected everywhere, and then we get to the fermenter room. And he goes, yeah, you walk up on top of the fermenter, you open it up, and you dump your dry hops in. And I'm like, yeah. Vinny,
you know,
everything in this brewery is magical and automated and from outer space. And then, but you still walk up to the top of the brewery and dump your dry hops in the top. Yeah. But you had a good reason for this old school rudimentary way of dry hopping.
What was it?
fuck.
This is a test.
It did have to do with CO2 bursting out.
Oh.
No. Oh, I know. Oh, I do remember. Yes. Oh, thank God. I was almost caught. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to tell you why Vinny does this. Because the introduction of oxygen by going through piping or any other way, or using like a hop cannon or other ways that you would do it, the pellets themselves potentially just have these bursts of oxygen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Whereas by going in the top, you're going to have, see, it did have something to do with CO2. You're going to have this burst of CO2 coming out anyway.
Right. Yeah.
That's like sort of scrubbing the tank for, oh, thank God I got this right.
Yeah.
And then you, am I right?
Yeah.
So by dumping in the dry hops that way, this old school way, it's just cleaner.
I almost called you out there, but you came out big time.
Phew.
I tried to get called yesterday. We had Rob, who's part owner in Urban Roots Brewery in Sacramento.
Mm-hmm.
What's Rob's last name?
Rob from Pangea.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But I don't know his last name. We know
Urban
Rob.
Roots. Anyways.
I forget.
He and his family were here, and one of his sons was wearing a Golden State Warrior shirt, and I was like, you guys live in Sacramento, why is your son wearing a Golden State shirt? Oh, he's always been a Golden State fan, even from when they sucked and they weren't winning. And he took his headphones off and he goes, are you talking about me?
Yeah.
I said, I was just talking about your shirt. And he's like, oh, who do you like? I'm like, oh, I'm a Warrior fan. He's like, what's the coach's name?
Oh no. Oh, he called you right there.
Yeah. And I'm like, Steve Kerr. And then I came right and I came back and I was like, what team did he used to play for? He goes, and he looked at me like I was an idiot. He goes, Chicago Bulls.
Wow.
And I'm like, well, who else? And he was like, he looked at his dad.
He's like, 10.
This is a standoff.
I don't care. I totally got him.
Yeah, he's stood up by some 10-year-old.
Right. And he's like, I'm not going to get stood up by this 10-year-old kid.
Rob's son like gave this like shit-eating grin. Like,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, he got me. He didn't know San Antonio Spurs.
He loved picking on the wrong guy.
That was awesome. Anyway, on the dry hopping thing, it was... The other part, too, is that we now have this Ferrari here in our brewery in Santa Rosa's, like a 1968 Volkswagen Bug.
Which is cool.
And thank you.
Cool.
I own a 79.
Yeah.
But, like, trying to flavor match, you can only go so far. So that's always how we've dry hopped at the pub. And then at the old production brewery, we used a hop cannon because we couldn't get to the top of the tanks, but we just wanted to bring every process we can together to make it similar, even dry hopping, even though they're using a hop cannon's probably the same. Mm-hmm. But the one thing that we saw at the at our old production brewery with a hop cannon was, you know, if a brewer accidentally set the regulator to the wrong pressure, or maybe they didn't run enough gas through the hop cannon, because the way we used to do it, we would add the pellets and then purge it for 20 minutes at 10 PSI. But if someone didn't purge it long enough or whatnot, or maybe they had a date and they needed to get out. Or,
that's what you said to me, which was a very practical thought, yeah. Actually. He was just thinking about an employee's day, yeah. And that you might just skip one step because you're, yeah. Not because he's a bad employee, because no. He's busy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, our brewers multitask. Mm-hmm. And so we dry hop the same. You add the dry hops. You do feel a little CO2 coming out. Mm-hmm. There's a whole protocol we have to it, but and it works. It's totally old school.
Yeah,
we're not connecting a pump to the bottom and mixing it. Although we do have a way to mix our tanks during dry hopping now. That's totally different than what anyone else uses.
Okay.
I heard you have a boat motor that you just hook
up
to the bottom.
Yeah, I want to hear about this again because you explained it and I totally didn't get it.
Yeah.
So. Well, we got a lot to talk about with this brewery. So I'm going to get us to a quick break. I want to talk about the beer that's in the cool ship because I'm worried about it. So I want to talk about that.
We'll start with that and get back to
the hops. And then we got some more beer to try. We are live from Russian River Brewing in Windsor, California. It's a brand new facility. You can come out any day of the week and enjoy their restaurant. They got tours. So you're going to want to check it out. Go to RussianRiverBrewing.com. Yeah?
Yeah.
You can get more information. And we'll be right back with Vinny and Natalie Chilurzo. Hang in there.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Welcome back to the session. We are live from Russian River Brewing Company in the cool ship room. And, you know, I was thinking, you know, of course, this is the first time we've broadcast from your brewery. But then I got thinking even further. I'm pretty sure this is the first time on planet Earth that anyone has ever broadcast from a cool ship room. I can't imagine it's been done before.
No, and who's going to, like...
Who would do this?
Who's going to refute it, you know?
First of all, that tends to be my best
good.
Facts. I draw out the ones that nobody can refute. Mm-hmm. But, like...
That's actually how I got to be the first person to make double IPA.
Is that right?
You just... No one ever came back and was like, well, I did.
Wait a second.
I was like, did you?
No. Called it. It's like calling shotgun. Basically like being 13 years old again. So we are in the cool ship room, and I mentioned before the break that I'm concerned, and here's why. All right. So you mentioned, I came here last week just to check the place out, see where we're going to broadcast, and we both loved the idea of doing it here in the room. But then you had said, hey, so I think I'm gonna put beer in the cool ship that day.
Wort,
forgive me. You're right. Wort. Wort. And
I remember my first podcast
about beer.
Yeah.
Well, my first response, I don't know if you remember, was like, oh, like, are you just going to throw it out when we're done? Because I couldn't imagine you. Now, of course, I could make fun of us, like, oh, we're dirty. But I just felt like even having people around an open fermenter in here would not be something that you would want. But you came back right away, like, no, of course not. And by the way, maybe it's a Brewing Network beer. I don't know what. But I thought I'm worried that we are going to ruin your wort.
This might be the most magical batch of Cinnambit.
Think
you might have to move your studio here for real.
Yeah. Oh my God.
You know, I can make the sacrifice to come back.
Right, Teresa's okay.
Yeah, I you know it.
You're not worried about people and
One of the coolest days, and maybe Natalie can tell the story during Younger when we had tours and we had filled the cool ship, and there was a group that came through.
Oh, there was it wasn't during Younger, it was before Younger.
It was before, I'm sorry, we had Younger.
We were fermenting Younger in the open tops.
Oh.
And we were filling the cool ship that day. And that tour ended up having like the most magical time because they were, the Younger was in Hoek Kroizen. And so it was really going crazy in the open tops. And then we're feeling the cool ship. So I go running down and I go, hey, tour guide, you know, we're feeling the cool ship right now. So make sure you hurry your group along a little bit. Mm-hmm. Vinny's in this room, and then the tour shows up, and then Vinny takes over the tour, and it ended up being a bunch of locals, and they just thought it was the most amazing thing.
And so groups come, like today, we had a couple tours mm-hmm. before we, before you guys arrived to set up, and you come in, and if you're on the 11 o'clock tour, because usually the cool ship fills mm-hmm. about 11 o'clock, when you get to the end of the tour to this room at 50 minutes after the hour, and if it's 11:50, you mm-hmm. won't even be able to see. We wouldn't be able to
just
see each other.
Steam.
Yeah, but we still bring the folks in.
You do.
And we pour them beer. There's stanchions up.
Okay.
So
but,
it's safe.
So it's never a problem. So it's not just that you wanted to have the broadcast in here. You don't mind people being in here in general.
No, nah. Not really. I mean, if you think about it, it's naturally fermented anyway, so
yeah.
It's not like we're trying to keep this like a clean room, like the open top fermenter rooms.
Okay.
So, and maybe having people in here will add an extra element to it. I mean, we've been at Cantillon on the open brew days, and there's been 25 people in the room when the cool ship falls.
Around the edge, looking
around the edges. Yeah. So I mean, who knows? We'll see how the beer turns out. Really, that's the
ultimate
test.
But the label on the barrel is going to say Brewing Network batch, so I remember.
Wow.
So I remember this date, you know, the May 13th, May 14th batch
sure.
of Sinambic.
And when it gets
good or bad,
right? Yeah. You can blame us.
He'll either never invite us back, or
we're here every day.
Or I prefer Natalie's opinion. Something magical might have happened.
Yeah,
I guess the thing is that I don't want to pigeonhole our spontaneous fermentation with the cool ship
mm-hmm.
and using the cool ship into just the tradition of what the Belgians do. And that's mm-hmm. been the great thing about Jean Van Rooy at Cantillon. I mean, the worldwide activity of spontaneous fermentation can be pinpointed to 100%, almost 100%, to Jean Van Rooy Cantillon telling brewers that you can spontaneously ferment anywhere. It may be different. I talked about this on the Sour Hour. You know, it was like, but you can still do it. And that's what he told us when we started spontaneously fermenting at the pub. And so, like, why not try a batch during the summer? You know, maybe you have to dump it.
Mm-hmm.
But that's you know, that's risk. You know?
And
or the flip side is it may be just absolutely magical. Or maybe it makes a beer that's super acidic. But we need super acidic beer to blend to, you know, maybe we have a beer that's a little low in acidity and we need something. So maybe that's where the summer spontaneous beer. So we have another batch planned for next week or the week after.
Mm-hmm.
And then we'll probably be done for most of the season. But come summertime, granted, it won't be on a 100-degree day. We'll find, like, because it's unique here in Sonoma County. I mean, the thing that makes the grapes grow so good is that it's pretty cool during the summer nights still.
Not days,
and there are 100-degree days,
mm-hmm.
but I remember a week in July, it was 3 or 4 years ago, and the entire week I remember showing up to our old production brewery, it was overcast the whole day. So like those are the days that I'm going to look for to do a summer spontaneous batch and try it.
Okay.
And if it doesn't turn out, okay, we won't do it again.
Yeah.
But
let's talk about some of the reasons for that. I probably should have done this in the beginning, but like I said, I'm going to show you a video. But the cool ship room has a lot of windows meant to be open. The cool ship itself is at about windowsill level.
Yep.
Which is for a reason, I think you said, for airflow.
Yeah. And so we use some old brewing books from Jean Declercq. So the top of the vessel is at about the bottom of the windowsill. So when the air comes in, it's almost like a convection, and mm-hmm. it's just going over the top of the wort to cool it down.
Okay.
The first batch we did, we had the windows open way too much, and so we probably have way too many windows in here. So there's only 4 of the 10 windows are open, and they're across from each other.
And they're barely open, by the way. 6 inches.
Open. Yeah, because as I mentioned also on the Sour Hour earlier, the first batch we did, it didn't ferment. because it cooled too fast, so it didn't have enough time to pick up all the bugs and critters in that red zone, that zone that they would tell you to never have your food at, or else it'll spoil, and we want that. And so we've also found here that we start earlier in the day, and we just let it sit all day, and that makes for really cool tours, too.
Sure.
So yeah,
is that why cool ships aren't typically out of copper? At least modern cool ships.
Because it would cool too fast?
Right, that's what I'm wondering.
You know, the copper thing is really, you know, will conduct heat better, and it's very traditional. For us, quite honestly, I didn't even look at copper. We, you know, we're in wine country. We have tank manufacturers, you know, all around, and so we went with stainless, and it was just easier to find someone to make a copper vessel. Just wasn't... it wasn't practical, but in the old days they used copper because it did transfer heat really well. But you also have to think that cool ships weren't only used in the old days just for making spontaneous beer. They were used for cooling everything.
Oh.
And,
yeah,
you know,
that was their way of
hence the name.
The wort.
Yeah. I see. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, I'm pretty sure that in the, you know, original days of Anchor, that's how they cooled the wort.
Okay.
So
they didn't want the spontaneous fermentation happening.
They
wanted to cool.
Yeah, they probably got it.
Right. They didn't want it.
But if you listen to some of Fritz's talks about Anchor in the early days when he bought the brewery, you know, all he could do was to it was hard. The beer was sour. And it's one of the reasons why he still doesn't like sour beer, because it's just so many bad memories.
Sure, that was when it went wrong.
Yeah. But yet, you know, that's what happened back in the day. And so to be able to make really clean beer in a cool ship is pretty difficult. And it's, you know, and yet you go to Anchor and you see how they do it now, and they still make Anchor Steam. Is 100% of Anchor Steam goes through those vessels. It's pretty damn cool. Open Top Fermenting is kind of a lost art, and you don't see it
that's
much.
It's coming back.
Yeah, but
obviously.
it is coming back, and the company that we bought our open tops from, not our cool ship, but our open tops, they specialize in open top fermenters, Gresser tanks in Regensburg, Germany.
Those are amazing, by the way, and I just want to point out, do you have photos of those on the website or something?
Oh, yeah.
Because, okay, good.
I can't post enough video of fermentation.
They're
the coolest thing.
So gorgeous. I walked by it. I was like, what is that? It looks like the best speaker I've ever seen. They just have this really cool... but I wanted to ask about this room, because you just mentioned, and I was looking around. Now, you said, there are 8 openable...
10.
There are 10 openable windows in this room. And you discovered after the fact, after your first batch, that you shouldn't open them all up. And now you've only got 4, right?
Yep.
But you did end up with this beautiful view in this... But I wonder if this is sort of one of those happy accidents. In other words, had you known beforehand, would you have only put in 2 windows up here that you, like, opened up? Like, you wouldn't have had the foresight to...
She would have had to convince me
to put more windows in.
Probably,
right?
Because I would have been all about the process and the beer.
Yeah.
She would have won out.
It's like a happy accident.
So,
yeah, I think so.
It worked out. And I you know, the vaulted ceiling, that's not normal for a cool ship room. Normally, you would want to contain more of the heat so that it drags out the process of cooling the wort. Although now you have breweries that have, and I'm blanking on any of them that have it, but they have portable cool ships, and they take them out into the fields, and some breweries have, you know, have them on trailers and whatnot. And the guys from Sierra Nevada that were here earlier brought a spontaneous beer that they took out in totes into, I think it was Almond Fields. So anyways, so there's all kinds of ways to do it. But that goes back to what I was saying earlier, that, you know, it doesn't have to be just the old traditional way.
Yeah.
And when you blend spontaneous beer, whether it's made in New York or Texas or California or wherever, like, it doesn't just have to be 3-year, 2-year, 1-year, like they do in Belgium with Lambic. It's, you can do is whatever you want. And that was the whole thing with Jean at Cantillon saying to other brewers, like, you can do this anywhere. You can spontaneously ferment in France, in Italy, in America. And yet, I remember a trip, I took a trip to Belgium 12 years ago. Let's see, we started spontaneously fermenting in 2006.
And when did you open Russian River?
Well, we opened at Corbell in 97.
Yeah, yeah.
And then
okay.
we did the pub in 2004. And
but you didn't start spontaneous till 2006.
Yeah, and okay. I took a trip to Belgium with Sam from Dogfish Head,
mm-hmm.
Rob
from Sam Adams. You mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, I had to do it.
Sam, why didn't I say that?
I was wondering.
Sorry, Sam. I had to do it. Buddy.
I thought we weren't talking about that.
Oh no!
Actually, good for. I should have
thought of that.
I love both of those guys. Yeah. Good for them. Go on.
Yeah. So, anyways, it was Sam, was Rob from Allagash, Adam Avery, Tommy from Lost Abbey, and myself. We took this trip. We went to three lambic breweries, and one of them, they said, you can't spontaneously ferment anywhere except the Pietenland, Brussels area of Belgium.
Hmm.
And yet, Jean at Cantillon was like, you can do it anywhere. And then Natalie and I were back in Belgium like a month or less after that trip. We went to Cantillon, and I remember our GPS didn't work. The little plug into the before your phones, you know.
Yeah, okay, sure. You had to use, so you had to rent the GPS.
Yeah, yeah. From her to
yeah. And it was all cobblestone streets, you know, in Brussels.
I don't think we did it right.
Yeah, and everywhere on the trip, anywhere we hit cobblestone streets, the GPS would inevitably go out.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet, magically, on the day we were going to Cantillon, it worked perfectly the whole time.
There were no cobblestones.
In Brussels, there are.
Not near Cantillon.
Around there, yeah, the warehouse district.
But you had to
basically.
Get there. You had to drive over some.
Sure, sure.
Anyways, so,
you made it there.
But that trip was magical for us and teaching us about spontaneous beer and opening our mind and giving us the courage to do it without even knowing.
It takes a person like that. In other words, especially when it comes to tradition. So many brewers can be like, well, this is what we do, and you should do something different. And this is what we do in Belgium, and you should do something different. Jean is a special person to have a... he's very steeped in tradition. I mean, that brewery alone has just been around so long. It's a museum. It's actually a museum. That's how I found it the first time, by the way. I couldn't find it. I kept asking everybody. And finally, a taxi driver said, do you mean the beer museum? And I said, I guess. There it is, Cantillon. He didn't know it was a brewery. You can be stuck in those ways. But for someone like that to say, you can do what I do.
Yeah.
I think that's a special type of person who comes especially from that background.
Yeah.
You guys are that way too. You talk to people about beer that way. You talk to people. You're very encouraging. And I know everyone can say the beer industry is so nice and everybody's helpful. I get it. I know that. But that particular thing of a certain style of beer, for Jean to say, no, man, go do it.
Yeah.
I think that's really something.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said earlier, single-handedly, Jean's the one that has made spontaneous fermentation to flourish all over the world.
Yeah.
Because he has just been encouraging people to do it. And a lot of the Belgian brewers, not just for Lambic Goose spontaneous beer, but for many other Belgian styles, will tell you that the Americans saved, like classic Belgian beer. Obviously not Stella or those lagers, but... You know,
certainly lambic and spontaneous, and I've talked with Jean about that, and
they're
others.
Grateful.
They are absolutely. Now, I guess what I wanted to know too, though, is okay. So up to that point, though, up until 2006, you were a clean beer brewery.
We made barrel aged beers where we inoculated with Brett and bacteria.
Did the two of you ever disagree about the direction you should go? I mean, that was kind of early on. Like, no one was really making sour beers here then. And so it's a bit of a risky move. It was going to cost you a shitload of money. Did either one of you look at the other and go, I don't know if this is the right direction?
No.
And we started making them actually out at Corbell.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Okay.
We made Temptation
was
our
first. But did they know
that? Yeah, they didn't know it.
they would have been furious, right?
Yeah, because although our building was like a mile away.
Okay.
I mean, they're on like 50 acres or something. I mean, that place is so big, I had my own golf cart.
Wow.
I had a Russian River golf cart. Of course, it wasn't as cool as Gary Heck, the owner's. His was gas and mine was like
the
electric putt-putt ones you see at the golf course. But I had my own golf cart. The facility was so big. But we started with two barrels and made Temptation.
Okay.
And, you know, I mean...
That was your first sour
barrel-aged beer. Yeah, we didn't even use bacteria first. It was just Brett.
Okay.
And, you know, the interesting thing, too, is that we didn't even sell it in the deli there. Like, I remember tasting it with some of the higher-ups, and, oh, I don't think this is going to sell.
Right.
So we had one account in San Francisco that would buy it.
But and, so, did you two know right away when you tasted that beer? Like, oh, this is what we were looking for.
It was amazing.
Okay. Because where did you even get the Brett to ferment this beer?
Y-East.
Dave Logston
was a great... And I'd met Dave at the Southern California Homebrewers Festival, which at the time was actually at my parents' winery, my family's winery. It started at my parents' winery's property. Mm-hmm. And Dave was one of the speakers one year, and he brought this beautiful Brett beer. But I had already been to Belgium, and so the idea behind Temptation was to take my favorite component of Lambic Goose beer, which was the Brettanomyces, and make a beer with it using local barrels. So the first base beer was Damnation, because we couldn't make a whole batch. Mm. So we pulled some Damnation off and added Brett to it, put it in Chardonnay barrels that we got from Ferrari Carano Winery, so not far from here over in Healdsburg, north in Healdsburg. And that was that. And then we entered it in the Great American Beer Festival.
And
there was like one category for sour beer, maybe two.
And how many entries do you think?
I'm not sure, but it got like a gold medal or something.
Sure.
And,
maybe two.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was one entry, you got silver.
Yeah.
They're like, hey.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah, no medal awarded in this category.
Yeah, I think there was one sour category, and it included everything. It was like, you know, like Flemish red and old Brun and like Lambic Goose styles, and then there was this other.
Okay,
and that's what I entered it in, is other sour beer. So it was like category, you know, 47E, E being other. You had like four other, like classic Belgian.
Right.
But there was no like Berliner Weiss, you know, category like there is now with like Berliner Goza. There's American sour. There's Brett beer, which obviously isn't sour. And Brett beer, they say don't enter sour beer, you know. But then there's American sour now, which is no wood, just stainless. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then there's still this classic category of, you know, Flemish reds and lambic and blah blah blah.
Okay,
but like there's like five or six categories now just for funky.
Oh yeah,
beer.
Yeah.
Maybe more.
Oh, yeah. It's got to be more than that.
Yeah,
I mean, it's to the point. It's really confusing how to enter your sour beer.
Yeah.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and yet one of my favorite. That's my favorite thing about Belgian beer is that the Belgians don't give a crap about style. And one of the coolest presentations I ever saw, and I saw Peter give it twice, was Peter Buchart. He did this presentation. He called it, is when he was still at New Belgium, but this was like 20 years ago. And the presentation was called 10 minutes of pleasure. No, I know it's like carbonic maceration.
I've never had 10 minutes of pleasure, by the way. Yeah. Ever.
Solid 2 minutes and 15 seconds.
I don't know what he's talking about, but I'll follow along. I will follow.
So the idea was around like, you know, everywhere, particularly in America, people are so into style, and yet in Belgium, they don't care. And the idea was like the average person drinks a beer in about 10 minutes, and they drink it, it's gone, and then it's what's next.
Yeah, yeah.
And he compared it to a piece of art, and it was this really cool presentation.
Of course he did, Peter.
And,
I love
but it was just that. It was just that idea of like, don't worry about style.
Yeah.
It's like, drink the beer, enjoy it. Don't freak out. Don't break it down. And freak out if it's not the right BUs for this and that. And
was that a bit freeing for you? Like, were you thinking about beer styles before that? Did that make you sort of go, oh,
yeah,
okay, I can do whatever the fuck.
Yeah, especially for these kind of beers.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'd been to Belgium before at that point, probably a couple times.
Yeah.
But it was nice to hear it from someone that I had a lot of respect for still.
Yeah. So. I could listen to him for days, by the way. Yeah.
His kids speak better English than he does.
That's part of his charm, though. I'm happy to hear that Temptation was your first. And I'll tell you why. I'm going to give you my top three Russian River beers right now. And number one has been Beatification since the day I tried it. I told you that. That's just one of those beers that kind of just smacked me across the face, and I've never been able to forget it. Temptation is number two. Blind Pig is number three. STS, by the way, is now... Actually, STS and Blind Pig switch places about once a month.
About once a month.
Yeah, yeah. I go back and forth between those two. But Temptation, you've been doing for so long, and it's such a great, great, great beer. It's very unique, I think, to you guys.
Yeah.
To me, it's both complex and easy at the same time. It's a very easy drinking beer.
It ages really well, and it gets really complex and gets these really cool champagne notes over time, because it continues. Because whereas Supplication or Consecration, we do not bottle condition it with Brett. We just use Saccharomyces wine yeast. Mm-hmm. But with Temptation, we use a mix. And so it's kind of Orval style, where it's a Brett finished beer, which is my favorite style. So the idea is that it continues to change over time. And so you do develop this complexity. It continues to ferment, and it continues to get drier and drier and drier.
Yet it's approachable enough that you can give it to almost anybody. So in other words, you don't have to be a beer geek to appreciate it. Yeah. If you're a beer geek, you're going to talk about how complex it is. We're going to sit down and talk about that. But otherwise, you just give it to somebody who doesn't care much about beer, and they're going to go, what is that? That is something else. That's what I mean by it's simple and, that one's one of my favorites.
Thank you.
STS. Can we talk about that? Mm-hmm. Is this a beer that should go into these open top fermenters? Is this something that you think will benefit from that because you want to get rid of those volatiles you were talking about?
100, everything, all the STS is now made in open tops.
Oh, it
all,
is?
100%.
The open tops are for this beer.
Yeah,
really?
Pretty much.
Oh.
And I've had other brewers, especially from Europe, say, why would you make your, Pilsner in an open top? We went to some breweries in Germany during our mini trips as we were building or designing this place, because our tanks in the brew house come from Germany, and they only made their Helles.
Okay.
And so for the same reasons that those breweries do that, because traditionally in Germany you think of open tops for wheat beers, for classic German wheat beers, unfiltered wheat beers and whatnot. And, you get a lot of those spicy clove notes and banana notes depending on the yeast strain, because you can really adjust the fermentation temperature a lot more. But for a beer like a Pilsner or a Helles, or just to say any light beer, lighter style beer, you really you can take some really clean flavors and make it even cleaner.
I see.
By having this tool to play with, to be able to ferment it, in this shallow tank so that you can blow off the fermentation byproducts. Yeah, is it getting down to the nuances of brewing, and can the average person...
Maybe I wouldn't notice,
Maybe the average person couldn't, but, we can.
Right.
I remember Chris Kramer, when he came here for the first time, Chris owns Carl Strauss, and he's a big STS fan, and he had it, and he goes, this STS is just a little cleaner and different, and is this so? If you can probably tell.
Yeah,
it's probably nuanced differences, but it's almost like I was just reading a thread on Master Brewer's post on this email thing they do, or I can't remember what they call it, but they were talking about dissolved oxygen and TPO, and there was a lot of talk on there about does it matter between, you can't tell 10 parts per billion difference in total package oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And in my mind, it's maybe you can't, but it's a sign of how tight our brewing is.
Yeah.
And the fact that we can be in the bottle with our Pilsner IPA under 20 parts per billion total package oxygen.
We were talking about this. What's the just so our listeners know, what would be the industry standard for parts per billion?
I mean, most breweries would consider 60 to be good.
Be good.
Oh, yeah.
And we're talking, by the way, folks, when you package a beer, bottle, can, whatever, obviously dissolved oxygen, you want to measure it. The less you have, the better. Certainly for shelf life.
Shelf stability, flavor stability.
Is TPO in parts per billion?
Yep. If your TPO is in parts per million.
What's it? Million or billion?
Yeah, billion. But billion, if you're in parts per million, if you read parts per million, you need to... clean up your
your beer's not going to be
but, good. But you know what? But you know what? At the same time, though, if you were to connect your DO meter to your tank and your beer was parts per million, at least you know. Like, at least you're not just sticking your head in the sand being like, well, I don't want to know. Mm. It's better to know and then be able to correct it. When we started packaging at our old production brewery, we had this old clunker of a bottling line. And it, I think we were at like 300 or 400 parts per billion.
Okay.
Maybe even 500, which is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And yet at least we knew. And it became very evident to us that we need to replace this thing as soon as possible.
Sure.
And so we are able to invest in what's now our funky filler here. Mm. And then we whittled it down and we got to like 50 parts per billion. And I was pretty stoked. And then we're like, well, what can we do to get even lower? Because then it became like our religion, as I always say. Part, you know, TPO is
what does TPO stand for?
Total package oxygen.
Total package oxygen, which is different than just DO. Like
DO is dissolved oxygen. So you measure DO in the tank, and you can measure DO, dissolved oxygen, in the bottle. But the true way to measure your oxygen in your bottle will be TPO, total package oxygen, with this special $60,000 piece of equipment.
Got it.
And you can measure it with a DO meter and then do a calculation, but it's not the same. And most small breweries confuse DO and TPO or shaken DO with true TPO. And at the end of the day, the TPO is the measurement.
It's the real
follow because it's everything in the bottle. It's headspace. It's what's in the beer.
And does it account for what's already been used to oxidize the beer itself?
That's a good question and comment because you need to get your bottle or can from the bottling or canning line to the tests as soon as possible.
Okay.
And so you would typically put it on a shake table for 5 minutes and then put it in the machine. And even if you don't have the TPO, the expensive, you know, crazy one like we do, you at least want to do the shake test, connect it to your DO meter, and then do your calculation. And you want to do it as fast as possible because it's because the beer is reactive. It'll start taking up the oxygen just like that.
As soon as you package it.
As soon as you package it. Yeah, so that's why doing a TPO reading on your bottle or can isn't any good if you do it 2 days later. Because at that point, you'll be like, oh, yeah, man, I'm at like five parts per billion.
Nailed it.
Yeah. That's because the oxygen has already absorbed into the beer, but you're not going to see the flavor profile degradation for weeks.
Okay.
But it's already absorbed in. So you want to do that test right away. So
here, in this conversation that Vinny and I had about this the other day, and you're just sort of leading into it where you said, you know, you got to 50 where you're like, cool, this is cool. But now it's sort of a challenge for you. And I want to talk about where you've gotten now, too. But you did make a comment because now you guys are down to something like 20, which is apparently ridiculous.
We're well under 20 now. We're 15 to 17.
Yeah. But we were talking about other brewers, and we weren't naming brewers. No. It wasn't a thing like that. No. But we were saying that it's common for brewers to say something like, well, I'm selling everything I make anyway. And so it's fine. And by the way, whatever the process might be, whether that be TPO or dry hopping, well, I'm selling all the beer I make anyway. Mm-hmm. And Vinny made this statement that I thought was very indicative of your success, by the way, which is, well, so do we.
Right.
And by the way, now I'm going to paraphrase you a little bit. Like this is, as you said it to me, I was thinking this, like Vinny sells every fucking drop of beer he makes before he makes it. Yet he still looks to improve on quality. So in other words, just because you sell every drop doesn't mean you shouldn't care deeply about the rest of the process and every part of that. And I thought that was just a real indicator. You can pick an industry of successful people or experts at their craft versus people who just sell stuff. And I thought that was just really something because, you guys sell all the beer too, yet you're still looking to get below. Now that you've reached 20, you're going to try to get below.
10's always been my goal.
Jesus.
We're at 17. Right. It's been our average. The last like 8 runs, we've like been under 20. But Natalie and I didn't start with anything. And our lab started with literally a microscope and a hemiosetometer, which is the little grid cartridge that you put under your microscope to count yeast. That's what we started our lab with.
You got to start somewhere.
Sure.
You got to start somewhere.
Instead of just saying, I don't need a lab, or I can't afford a lab, just have something.
Or I don't need a lab because I sell everything I make. Yeah.
And you can, really I can't remember.
It's not a good excuse. And hopefully over time, as the craft becomes even more and more expert, I mean, it's still a young industry, right? As it becomes more and more expert, maybe those are the folks that will continue to get weeded out, right? But I still think it's just a great approach to take. Yes, my beer's good. Yes, I sell every drop. Yes, I can still always get better.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's your approach.
You can count yeast on a Fisher-Price kid's literally, like, that's
microscope. Yeah.
Yeah. It's amazing. You know, you could do it on that.
Yeah.
So. And what I was most impressed with was putting a brand new brewery 6 months old. There's a bottling line, but no canning line.
You stop right there because we're going to do that. Yes,
oh,
we're going to talk about that.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to get us to a break first. Got to mention a couple things. I do want to just tag on to this. It doesn't really matter what size you are or how rudimentary your brewery is. I went to Montana at a brewery there, a Phillipsburg Brewing Company, a tiny brewery in Phillipsburg, Montana. There's a video of it on our YouTube page. And I got to do a brew day with the brewer. And he actually, now that I think of it, he was doing a bit of a Pliny clone.
Oh, cool.
Or maybe it was a Pliny pig clone. Good, turned out great. Yeah. Whole hops. Anyhow.
That's because you were there.
We're in the, yeah, maybe so. And we're in this tiny, like, think Montana, like quintessential Montana, this tiny pub on a tiny system. And during the brew day, I'm like watching the kettle or whatever I'm doing. He goes into the back and he comes back with a fucking microscope. And he sits down at the bar with his microscope and does his yeast count to prepare to pitch into that beer.
That's awesome.
That's what I thought, too. Yeah. I looked at him and I said,
good for him.
You are amazing right now. He's like, well, I got to know how many cells I'm pitching, don't I? And I got to know that they're clean. And like, he just was really, I'm telling you, this was, not that it should matter. We're talking like a 3-barrel batch. Yeah. I don't know what. But he went back and he got his microscope and he sat down at the bar and he did his thing.
Yeah.
It's important.
Because it matters.
It matters.
I mean, I think everybody should feel the same way we do. This is us. This is our name.
Yeah.
This is, you know, this might as well say Vinny and Natalie IPA. Yeah.
Right, across the blind pig bottle.
If a brewer doesn't feel that way, then maybe this isn't the right business. But, you know, you put your heart and soul out there. And just like having people over for dinner, if you're going to make them a really nice meal, you want to make sure it's the best that it can be.
Yeah, you don't have to start. I mean, we have a really nice lab.
Now?
And
we've spent how many some years
stupid
later, sure.
amounts of money on it. But Russian River is now from Corbell day one. Is this 23 years?
Yeah, 22 years.
So we didn't have a lab to start, but we grew into it. And there was a point when we wouldn't buy anything if we couldn't pay cash for it. Mm-hmm. And so I would come to Natalie
those days
with...
Are over.
Yeah.
Now that you want a super lab.
Right, yeah. Uh-huh. But like we... That was about the only thing that we would, probably was the only thing that we would spend money on that we didn't look at return on investment.
Okay.
Like I would say to Natalie, like, hey, we didn't have a yeast brink yet to store yeast. We were like literally pulling it, storing it in, you know, food grade trash cans. I'd go in and stir it every day, and it's not the best environment. So I said to Natalie, I said, okay, like, we need a yeast brink. And here's why. And I could tell her that, well, the yeast will be healthier. We could cut 2 days off of fermentation because we had more viability. Thus, the fermentations and the beer was cleaner. But then, and so that was easy. It's like,
can I just say that I picture you as like a 15-year-old boy going and like to convince her, like, honey, listen, okay, here's all the reasons we need it. Like, this is how I picture you going in, like, hat in hand.
It could be my birthday present and my Christmas present this year.
Right, for the next 5 years.
Right. Yeah.
That's how I picture it happening.
But for lab equipment, I would, you know, we would talk and I would say, okay, like, you know, here's the TPO, you know, machine. It's $50,000-$60,000, but here's why we need it.
Yeah.
And it was always like, okay, because Natalie runs the business side. She, yeah, done.
Of course.
We have the money. Let's spend it on it. And we bought that within, I think, 6 or 12 months after we started bottling at the old production.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Oh, so you bought it even back then.
Yeah.
So you say, I just want to clarify, because you say you do these things without thinking about ROI. And so maybe the ROI is not very calculable. However, it's an intangible ROI. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because you guys do have a reputation of clean, great, shelf-stable beer. That's your intangible ROI of that thing.
I guess
there's a return.
Yeah. And I hope that we become, you know, like a model for other breweries to, and they understand that you don't have to do it overnight. Yeah. You don't need everything.
Like, well, for me, in my brewery, it's always been like, how much does it cost to dump a batch of beer? And how much is the tool that would save that batch of beer if you could analyze what you're doing ahead of time? Mm. So it's a no-brainer. You know, you, like, every brewery can afford a microscope and a hemocytometer and the time and effort required to check your yeast.
That's a great way to look at it.
And, you know, and as your batches get bigger, you know, maybe you can afford that.
It's only a couple, but before you're buying that piece of equipment.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I honestly would love a DO meter.
Yeah.
And that's probably on our, you know, that's on our wish list of the next purchases we have for lab equipment.
And the cool thing with like DO is that they're not all $25,000.
Yeah.
There are $7,000 DO meters. And you know, $7,000 is a ton of money for any business, even if you're big. But, and maybe it's not quite as accurate as a $25,000 one, but it's almost like my analogy of, you know, if your DO is in parts per million, okay, it's not good, but at least you know.
Yeah.
And like, and the $7,000 DO meter isn't maybe quite as accurate as the $25,000 one, but at least you know and within range. We're now on our third iteration of DO meter. We started with like $7,000 DO meter, and then we upgraded to this $15,000 one, and then we upgraded to the $25,000 ones we have now. But we did it in time, and we did it in steps.
Sure.
And along the way, we gave one of our DO meters to Yvonne DeBates at De La Seine, and we gave him his first DO meter, and I'm very proud of that because I love Yvonne.
He makes great beer too, so you should be proud of him.
I mean, the dude talks about yeast with she does this and she does that. She makes me so crazy sometimes.
Oh my god!
How can you not love a guy that speaks of yeast like that?
Right?
He's so passionate.
Oh my god! By the way, I'm going to speak for Teresa. You know, when your $25,000 one is only worth like $3,000, she'll be ready. She'll be next to
him. I know.
She'll be like, cool.
I'm set for hand-me-downs. You know? Definitely, I will attend your garage sale with a full pocket.
All right, I'm going to get us to a break because we have more to talk about, including more about dissolved oxygen, because as Beardy brought up, I want to talk to you about why you don't have a canning line. I thought big new brewery, it's the new thing. Everyone seems to have a canning line. So when we come back, we're going to do that. But first,
we're doing a blind tasting too, right?
We're doing that. I lied. We have one more break.
Okay,
so we're
going
to come back. We're going to talk.
I'm excited for the blind tasting.
And then we're going to make Beardy do a blind tasting. I've set you up, Beardy.
That's every tasting. Great,
yeah,
thanks.
It's true. He can barely see already. Yeah. It's kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But real quick before the break, I just want to point out that usually I have a lighter in my pocket so I can always open a beer, and I don't today. And I wanted to open this STS Pills, and I reached inside, and I remembered that Vinny gave me the key to the brewery. I have the master key to the entire Russian River Windsor Brewery.
Here's to that.
I have finally made it.
It's actually both breweries.
Yeah, actually, that one gets in the pub, too. Yeah. That's a Grand Master.
That's right. He did ask me. He's like, what's the code on it? Well, he handed it to me because I'm just moving in equipment, and I didn't think about the time. I said, oh, thank you. That's great. And I put it in my pocket, and I started eating. And 10 minutes later, I was like, wait a fucking second.
You were very slow because he gave me the list of doors it got into, and I'm like, that's most of them. You're not getting what he just did.
Not a newsflash. I am very slow, and I do feel like I've made it. I have the key to the brewery. Don't worry. I will give it back.
Can I tell you the
question? But I do want to hold on to it for the rest of the show. Yes.
Story?
Yes.
I once had a similar situation. There was a Master Brewers technical seminar at Sierra Nevada up in Chico. This was probably 8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And we this happens most every, it happens every other year. Usually it's in Chico, and then there's another technical conference down in Paso Robles. So this was the one in Chico, and we had our brewing crew there, which at the time was like four or five people.
Okay.
And we stay overnight and do the whole thing. It's a 2-day thing. So Ken comes up to me and he goes, "Oh, are you here with your team?" And I said, "Yeah." And he gives me a scan card. And he's like, "Yeah, if you want to show your crew around, just
wow, yeah,
nice.
just yeah, take them wherever."
Yeah,
and I kind of had the same moment. I'm like, and I thought about it. I'm like, Ken Grossman's scan card. And
yeah, is it made out of copper?
Gold.
Gold.
yeah. And I ran into a few of the crew at Sierra Nevada that night, and it came up and. And they were like, "You know, his scan card goes into rooms that like no one else can get into."
Yeah.
And then the next day, like midday in the conference, and I think he was leaving early, so he came down and tapped me on the shoulder. "I need my scan card back."
"Give me that." Yeah.
So I gave it back to him.
Yeah.
And he whispers, he goes, "Hey, did you use it?" Like, fuck no, I didn't use it.
Right. Same. So I would never, right? But there's, that is funny.
But the thing is still his son Brian never lets me live it down. He's like, "You had the golden key to the entire Sierra Nevada brewery."
Right.
"And you didn't use it, you dumbass."
See? Yeah.
Do you even swipe it to just see the light go green?
I've never
on the
even
door?
Used it.
Like, not even go open the door, just be like, "Oh, man. It did work."
I didn't
Here's
use
the
it.
Thing. Here's the thing. You know when someone is respectful enough to give them the key. In other words, you never would have gotten the key if he felt like you. And by the way, probably the same thing. Like, you knew if I was going to go running mad around Russian River, even though I had to unload my equipment, you'd have been like, "Someone will let you in."
I was just worried that the security guard would be like, "Son, what are you doing?
What the hell are you doing?"
Like, I swear, Ken, he'd be like, "You stole this. What happened to Ken Grossman? Did you beat him up to get this?
Get arrested."
Yeah, I was going to get arrested by the Sierra Nevada cop. They have police at Sierra Nevada.
They have their own.
Time.
I don't know.
Oh, they must. Enough. They have their own everything.
Right. So,
they have their own key maker, for example. I don't know if you've seen The Matrix, but they have that.
Anyways, I when you told me that earlier, I had this flashback of Ken giving me his scan card and me not using it.
It didn't hit me, but once it did, I was like, "All right, you have made it. You've got the key to the brewery, my
you
friend.
Did, you've oh used gosh. It. You used it to open up that bottle of STS."
I did use it for that, and I opened one door. Maybe two doors. They were on the way here. Yeah.
I tried to find the fob, but I couldn't find one, so that's all I had in my stash of keys.
There's a fob with a button that just unlocks the whole brewery building.
What he's saying is it would have been less access. He had to give me more access.
Oh, okay. Well, the fob would have gotten you in the same places.
Oh. Okay. Well,
I'd never use my the only room that I use my key is our open top rooms, because only brewers have access to the open top rooms.
Okay. Mm.
And they're not on a fob. They're on a true key.
And is that because those do have to be kept clean and pristine?
And we worry about safety as well, that we don't want anyone. Yeah. I mean,
CO2 is a concern.
The CO2, and there's CO2 detectors in those rooms. And so it's a safety thing.
Okay.
So
do they, I know I'm supposed to get us to a break, but do they just vacuum CO2 constantly?
Isn't that the cool thing about internet?
I know. Like, we just do whatever.
Do whatever.
I was thinking about that when you were giving me the tour the other day. I just thought either A, nobody's allowed in there at certain times, or you have a massive ventilation system.
Massive ventilation.
Okay. Yeah. That's why we had to value engineer the third room out, because it was so expensive, this fancy. We're constantly pumping fresh air into the rooms, and it's
that has to be filtered.
It's HEPA filtered, and it goes through UV light to kill any bacteria. So it's 100% pure, clean air that comes in.
So you can walk in there at any time and not fear CO2. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
No, it's fine.
And I was telling your crew earlier when I gave them a tour that, and I only thought about this the other day, we have fermentation capacity in open tops for 10 batches of beer. And yet, I think we can squeeze into that area. We could have put like 32 batches of maybe 24, whatever, like more than double, if not triple, the amount of capacity in closed top fermenters. We could have done in that same space.
Okay.
Like our capacity is like 60 or 65,000 barrels here. It could have easily been well over 100,000 barrels.
If we would have put
closed top fermenters. And you know what? For the amount of money for those, let's say like 6 or 8 closed top quadruple batch fermenters, it probably would have been the same cost as the build out of because the floors are still sloped, there's drains below, and yet you don't have all this infrastructure and HVAC.
Two floors.
Oh, and like the engineering of that room was stupid.
Okay.
That was one of the most painful parts of the design because you had this floor that was like Swiss cheese.
Yeah.
And you had to have all these holes and yet it still needed to be structural.
So
the cross members, and then every time we would change, the structural engineers would be like, okay, here's our design. And we'd be like, well, that doesn't work. And they'd be like, well, it has to. And like, well, we can't because the glycol can't connect. Where you have a column is right where the glycol connection is.
Yeah.
And then they would go back to the drawing board and come back with something even beefier, and because now there's less columns.
Wow.
And then it was like, it was so expensive.
That is a nightmare.
And that's why we charge engineers twice as much money when they come to the brewery. Yeah.
Were you guys on budget? Just hearing about this could be a simple answer or different. Yeah.
No.
It was over.
That was blown before we even broke ground.
We lost the bet to Brian Grossman on that.
Yeah. Oh,
we owe Brian and Gina Grossman a trip to Belgium
because
but we can't afford it.
That budget's been blown.
Yeah, just come have Belgian beer with us. Because did you say you guys wouldn't go over budget at all, or was there a range?
There was a range,
and their range was much higher.
Yeah, we blew it
big time,
like double.
What was your range? You said you'd go over by 50%.
It was more like a number.
No, it was a number.
I see.
It was an over under. It was an over under.
Got it.
Yeah.
We lost it.
How bad? Like, did they kill you? Did we kill it?
Yeah, we killed it.
It was way over. Success.
Yeah.
Hit it out of the park.
Well, okay. Just quickly before the break, I want to back up to the CO2 scrubbing because I want to tell a funny story about how some people don't pay attention to this stuff. A good friend of mine, I'm not going to say what brewery, I'm going to say it's not in the U.S. though, built a small brewery, had a party at said brewery. Everybody got drunk.
Oh, no.
And later, late at night at said brewery, they decided to turn the mash tun into a jacuzzi. So he put hot water into his mash tun. It's like a shallow mash tun, right? And they all jump in. It's hot water. Okay, cool. But it's not jacuzzi enough. We should turn on some bubbles.
Ooh.
Oh, no.
That does not sound safe.
He turns on the bubbles.
Well, the bubbles.
They're having a good old time. Probably for not too long before someone starts getting a headache and someone else is like, I don't feel so good. And then the guy, brewery owner, immediately, as much as this happens, like, oh shit, the bubbles are CO2.
He could have killed them.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Oh, why are the lights? Why is everything getting dimmer right now?
He hadn't thought of this. They were hammered and they're partiers. I luckily, because I'm that kind of an idiot, had left just before jacuzzi time.
Good.
And everybody was fine. Everybody made it out. Like, luckily, symptoms started happening. And he goes, oh, that's not O2. That I'm pumping through. It's CO2.
That's not smart.
Wow.
Not smart. Everybody gets out of said jacuzzi. Everyone's all right. They had a good laugh because they're all partiers. And luckily nobody died. But as you're telling me about the scrubbing and how it's like safe you guys are, I'm thinking of my friend and I'm like, oh man, I just know so many idiots. all right. Let's do this. I'm going to get us to a quick break. And when we come back, we got a lot of things to do. We're going to talk about why there's no canning line at Russian River. Beardy's going to get a blind tasting before the show is over.
If there's one thing you can do,
give me a blind tasting.
I'm excited for that, actually.
Right?
We've already talked about it. You don't know yet.
Right. I don't even know what I'm tasting.
Yeah, it's okay. You're not going to know.
That's right.
Is it going to be beer?
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay. And it's good beer.
Okay.
Yeah. It's not like we're giving you crappy beer.
Oh, okay.
It's really good beer.
Well, because he's in charge. Otherwise, I'd be giving you fun.
It's not Justin's beer.
No, it's our beer.
Okay.
It's Russian River beer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Then it's all going to be great already. Yeah. I can tell.
You'll be all right. You'll be fine.
There's no wrong answer. It's kind of the cool thing.
I've heard that before.
Well, there maybe is.
Yeah.
there's been for
there's
something.
There's an answer that we get to make fun of you for.
Yeah. Oh,
it might
boy.
Not be a wrong answer.
Okay.
All right, hang in there. It's the session, and we'll be right back. Welcome back to the session live at Russian River Brewing Company, the new facility in Windsor, California. And we're in the cool ship room, which just keeps changing as the daylight changes, too. It just keeps getting nicer and nicer. And I bet you guys spend a lot of time just coming up here. If you need a break or a breather, do you just pop in here?
Yep.
The neat thing about the cool ship is on the days when we have wort in it, word kind of spreads.
Okay.
And employees want to come up here, and the tour guides have access, and everyone gets really excited
just to be a part of it.
Yeah, just to come in and check it out and see it.
So when I came in earlier today, I came in around 1 o'clock, and you had put the word in about an hour or two before that.
2 hours before, yeah.
So we could see each other. You could see the steam coming off, and it wasn't a room full of steam, but boy, was it humid.
Yeah.
And that stuck around, but right now it's really nice. So in other words, this old technology of the cool ship really works. It's only been a few hours, and it's nice and cool in here.
Everyone's skin looks great.
Yeah, my curls.
Yeah.
It's like going to the spa.
It's spa day.
Spa treatment with wort.
But you have it for this spontaneous fermentation, but I mean, originally it was just designed to cool wort, right?
Yeah.
Back in the day, I mean.
Some brewer said just surface area.
Yeah.
And like we were talking about copper.
Oh, yeah.
You know, earlier, and how copper is a better conductor of energy.
Right. Cool it down.
Cool it down so it would cool faster. And, you know, the fact that you don't want it sitting on the ground, if possible, to get airflow underneath it, specifically thinking, you know, 100 years ago, copper vessel.
Right.
That you would get airflow underneath as well.
Yeah.
And, sure. And it was neat that we were able to go back to an old brewing book and kind of take some pointers from it to design it.
That's so funny because you were literally a book that hasn't even been written for most of your brewery.
Yeah,
it's called the technology you're doing.
It's two words. It's called Ken Grossman.
And then going back to the old school over here with this.
Yeah, no. It's true.
That's
what I like, the kind of when you walk through the door into Funky.
Yeah.
And you're in this red hallway, and it's different lighting, the way that Natalie designed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like a juxtaposition. It's the difference.
It is. You're entering a new world.
Yeah.
And that
I like
was the
that.
Whole. Because it is. It's actually a completely separate brewery. The only thing that we share is a brew house. But everything else is completely different. We have, you know, we have our own tanks in the Funky Brewery. We have our own, obviously, the barrels.
Mm-hmm.
Our own bottling line, the old bottling line, is now the bottling line for the Funky Brewery.
Okay.
So we have a second bottling line for all the sour barrel-aged beers. So it's a completely, and we even have it has its own brewer. And his name's Al.
Is he not allowed on the clean side?
Al is not allowed on the clean side. Yeah. Every once in a while, he'll go and run a centrifuge. But other than that... Yeah.
But he has to wear separate... We have separate shoes and gloves. And it's a funny thing when we have a new hire and you're showing them the ropes on brewing and whatnot. And you're like, oh, and by the way, if you work in Funky, you can't wear those clothes tomorrow.
Yeah.
You're doing laundry.
You actually say this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And
if
you go to the pub after your shift, you need to walk around.
Yeah. Years ago, I was interviewing the brewer from the owner from Captain Lawrence, in New York, and he was doing funky
Scott.
Stuff way back then. Yeah, and his brewery was next door to a winery, and he was saying to us back then that the vintners wouldn't come into his brewery.
Oh yeah,
they just refused. Yeah. We're not coming into your brewery.
Natalie once gave a tour to some winemakers.
Yeah, don't touch anything.
Yeah.
It's got Brett. It's everywhere.
Don't touch anything. That was at the old brewery.
We just hosted a beer and wine yeast symposium. Well, we didn't host it, but we hosted the hospitality night for it. It was a beer and wine yeast symposium down at Ronert Park. It's for about 100-110 people.
Mm-hmm.
And their big hospitality night we had here. And we can open up the guided tour walkway and the self-guided tour walkway into be one big loop. And it's all looking down into the brewery, and there's the tasting bars along the way, and we open up the cool ship room.
Yeah.
So we greeted them, and more than half of them are winemakers. So, of course, what did we give them when they came into the door? We handed them a glass of Sanctification, our 100% Britannomyces fermented beer.
Yeah.
And I wanted to prove to them that, like, you can make really nice, clean flavors with this.
Yeah.
And we have a friend in here in Sonoma County who's making 100% Brett wine. She's making a Pinot Gris. And it's absolutely a lovely wine because Brett expresses all of its you know, negative flavors in wine and unique flavors in beer, because it is more conducive to beer. It does it when it's under a stressful condition. Hmm. But when you, you know, pitch it at normal pitch rates and aerate it like you would normally for a Saccharomyces cerevisiae yeast, you know, at 10 or 12 parts per million oxygen to help make the yeast grow and bud and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
It actually makes beautiful beer.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to prove that to these winemakers.
That it could be good.
Yeah. Of course, have fun with them, too, and make fun of them a little.
And contaminate them from the inside out.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry, guys. Some friends of mine in France were showing me, they call it... the term that they use, and maybe they're just translating, is natural wine.
Yeah.
Which is kind of, you know, certain wineries in France are doing the same thing, which is basically spontaneously fermented wine.
It is.
You don't age it, you don't sit it in the cellar, but it's wonderful the way they were making it.
Yeah, and there's wineries around here that are making natural wine.
Are they saying the same thing? Is that the same
natural
term here?
Wine.
Okay.
Yeah, and we go back and forth. We go back and forth, so it's the same thing.
Yeah.
Wineries are always better at marketing.
Yeah.
You know, they natural wine instead of...
They sort of have to be.
You know, spontaneous, or they'll call it native yeast fermentation.
We say
wild.
Yeah, you're right.
Better.
We are not very good at this, are we?
You know, Matt Brennelson and I used to always talk about, you know, because Firestone's in the middle of wine country, too, down there in Paso, and, like, how wineries have, you know, all these other, you know, variables that the winemakers have no control over, vintage, vineyard designation, you know, appellation, blah, 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 blah.
Yields.
And then they charge, you know, they change the pricing of their wine based on
accordingly.
And they're just better at marketing.
They have to, by necessity, right? Or none of them would stay in business.
They also have better lobbyists.
Yeah.
Because they have 1.5% alcohol difference on what their alcohol is, and we in the beer industry
On the label,
we only have 0.3.
And yet,
I always say, like, yeah, but they have a year before they need to bottle.
They can plan for it.
And yet, beer, or ale, we have 2-3 weeks.
Well,
and you already ordered the labels to be printed a month ago.
Of course, it's being based on. There's, I'm sure it was on alcohol. That beer back then was like 4 and 5% alcohol, and one and a half swing on 5% is a lot different than.
But there are other places that you know that they have better lobbyists. Too, like just liquor laws in general, how you're allowed to promote, where you're allowed to go. I mean, it's a whole thing.
Well, Natalie and I we're huge wine drinkers. We love wine. Probably do drink more wine at home than beer. Mm-hmm. And every once in a while, we'll open a bottle of wine and be like, what's the alcohol? Okay, first it's in like negative font numbers on wine labels because it's like so small.
Reading glasses don't even help.
Yeah, and it's, and of course it's harder when you're getting old.
Yeah, plus you've had 2 bottles by then, but go on.
So I'll be like, I don't think that's 13.9% alcohol. So we'll save a little and bring it into our super duper Anton Parr alkalizer. And be like, it's like 16.1.
Wow. Like,
1.5 what?
Exactly.
Amazing. Well, just to wrap up the two different sides of the brewery, too, before we go to another, I like, Natalie, that you it's not just about the beer. You made it look and feel different, too. Probably not just for the tour, but maybe even for yourself. So, like, when you walk from one side, you know that you're going to have a different experience at the other side.
Yeah.
Both how you taste it and how you see it and all that. So I appreciate the way that you did that.
Do you love this door?
The door is amazing. Am I allowed to
say whatever you want?
Okay, because I was like, this door, wow. And in my head, I'm thinking like, where'd you get it? Like, you got this made, and he's imported. And Vinny just blurts out, I got it on eBay. And it's this beautiful, for folks at home, I'll do video of that too, but it's this beautiful Abbey door, you know, with a peak at the top, and it's got the speakeasy door so you can see who's banging down it.
What's the password?
And, the whole frame. And I just could, especially looking at the whole brewery, I'm like, you hired a monk to, like, make this for you.
Somebody tore down a church so they could have the door.
Exactly. And Vinny's like, eBay.
And it was our brewery warming gift from one of our contractors.
Our general contractor found it on eBay because I was showing everybody images of what I was looking for. And so we were like going to oldchurchdoors.com. You know, I would email people and say, hey, could you keep your eyes up? This is what I'm looking for. And so there was this whole hunt for the door, and then Steve shows up to one of our meetings. He's like, is this what you're looking for?
Yeah, that's
why.
Well, bye now.
I love it. See, you know what? It's actually just fitting. Technology.
And I remember it was sitting in the corner of the barrel room in a huge crate that it got shipped in. The shipping was probably more than the door itself.
Oh, my gosh, I bet.
And he goes, you want to see it? I'm like, no, actually, I don't. I want to wait until it's in.
Oh, I mean, I heard wanted the to see it the day it arrived.
I'm sure you did.
I'm like, saying, tear that crate apart.
We
got to
see this.
Yeah.
Well, and just so you know, folks, so the building itself, it's from the outside, it's a little bit of, you're going to describe this better than me, so correct me as I go, Natalie, but it's kind of like modern agriculture, like modern barn outside to me. It's got like, it's got some red color, some gray color. It's tall. It's got peaked ceilings. As you come inside, of course, the tasting room is very comfortable and modern farmhouse-ish.
Mm-hmm. Modern farmhouse, yeah.
As you go into the brewery, it gets obviously a little more industrial.
Mm-hmm.
And as you keep going through the brewery, it's like industrial technology. And then you come to the side that we've been talking about, and you walk down the final corridor. And the final corridor now is painted red, a dark a crimson type of color, so it warms up. To your left, you see the massive collection of barrels, mm-hmm. where you're aging beer, which...
And you smell the oak, because it's open.
You smell it immediately. Yeah. Vinny, you might remember, I was immediately proud of you. When I walked in, I just looked down and I went, oh, I fucking remember your first barrel room. I'm so proud of you right now. And you see that, and you continue to walk down the corridor.
And the temperature, and, too.
Oh, yeah.
It's great, Troll.
My favorite place in the brewery.
Yeah. Yeah, you're very cold-blooded.
Other than the cold room.
Yeah.
But the point of the here, too, is as you now look at the end of this corridor where the door is that we're talking about, it's not just a monastery-looking door. It's almost an altar. There's a stairway, a wooden stairway lead that narrows at the top. It's wide at the bottom that leads up to the door to this altar that is the cool ship room. They're all leading to the door, and I love the way you designed it. And the juxtaposition is why I sort of went through that whole description, because it's nice as you come through and it just keeps changing, and it's like a grand finale.
Yeah, it is. Yeah,
and now it's the Brewing Network studio.
It is. Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever you want. Yeah. I mean, you got a key to the place. That's right.
Yeah. Originally, I'd wanted a sweeping staircase with a radius to it. But throughout construction, we learned a lot about, you know, right angles and corners and bendy things.
As that you do.
When you start bending things into curves, they tend to cost, you know, five
more.
Times as much.
I was going
to
say, it's not just a little.
You got a sort of sweeping staircase.
I think it looks great.
Oh,
it
beautiful.
Looks awesome.
Because
yeah,
I remember sitting in those design meetings, and it was getting value engineered down. And I must have missed like one meeting or something, because I thought we were going to end up with something that was just narrow.
No.
And I didn't realize that. So I was so happy.
It has to be. If you didn't do the stairway the way you did, the door, frankly, would be very underwhelming.
Wouldn't be as grand.
It needed to
be a grand entrance. That was the whole vision.
Yeah.
It's like walking into church.
That's the goal. Yes. Yeah. That's the goal. Because, I mean, a lot of people reference this as going to church.
Sure. You know? And for a lot of people, let's be real. For a lot of people, this kind of thing is, you know.
And, you know, the cool thing is we still put in a wheelchair lift.
I saw that.
It still fits in.
That was very important
to us. And it was important. And our friend Corey, who lives in Oakland, who has ALS, is in a wheelchair. And he was the first one to use it.
Mm.
And it was, we were so happy, because he was always the person we thought of through all the ADA stuff.
Yeah,
was, you know, Corey is going to be here.
Yeah,
and we need to take care of Corey and others.
Of course, you want to be accessible.
Yeah,
it's
and
very
do it
thoughtful
legal and right. But Corey was our we were just so happy when he was the very first.
Yeah, it was really interesting. He and his mom just happened to stop by that day to say hi, and so I was taking him on a tour. And the lift guys,
installers,
the elevator installers, were here. Commissioning it that day, and so we walked up to the cool ship room, and I said, oh, you know, unfortunately the guys are just installing it right now, we're not able to get you up there, but next time. And the guy said, you know, actually I just got it all hooked up and tested. Why don't we bring him up? We
can
bring
love
him up
this.
Right now. So we literally just turned it on and we were able to get our friend Corey in here for the first
time. That kind of makes my heart melt. That is perfect timing.
It was perfect. Yeah. It was meant to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
If you didn't care about having people in here, you could almost get another cool ship in here.
We're wasting some space.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Sure. Really are about the experience.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. It's great because you have a bar in here even.
Mm-hmm.
So people can come and drink while the beer's cooling or wort.
Did we talk about the wood in here?
You know, on the sour hour, but let's mention that now because I liked my joke about it too. So tell us about the wood because it's all bare. There's no paint. There's no finishing whatsoever. Tell us about the wood and where it's from.
Yep. Sure. Well, this wood is from Mills River, North Carolina. If you've ever been there, you know there's a beautiful brewery that was built by our friends, the Grossman family in Sierra Nevada. And so when we told Ken what we wanted to do in this room, that we wanted to literally line the whole room with wood, he said, well, I have a bunch of leftover wood from the construction of the new brewery because they had to take some trees down on the property, which they reused as much as they could, but then they didn't need it all. So he just has it all stored in a barn or something. And so he just sent us a list of what he had, and then we sent him our wish list. And, a couple months later, a truck of oak and yellow and white pine from North Carolina showed up. This is all yellow and white pine here, and that bar is also from
same
the
material.
Same material.
Okay.
Yeah, and that has no finish on it. It has a little bit of wax on it, so you don't get splinters.
I see.
Like on the top, but otherwise, there's no finish on it.
But this is all natural, as we talked about.
And the idea there is that you want something porous and to go ahead and absorb whatever happens in here.
Yep.
Yeah, much like the inside of a barrel, if you will, because we want it to be its own living environment in here. So over time, you know, much like the lambic breweries, it will create its own environment.
Okay. Yeah. I love this. And it also makes it look, I don't know, special too, because it's so unfinished. Yeah. And so over time, though, I mean, who knows how it's going to change? This could turn black, right? Like anything could happen to this.
Yeah.
My joke was that when I was we opened our first Hop Grenade tap room, and my partners and I were looking for a second one, and we started looking in Santa Rosa. And it was a joke, but not really a joke, was that if we opened close enough to the Russian River pub, if we just got your scraps, we would make it. Right? And this was kind of our thing. Like, had we found a place close enough, we might have done it. And then as Vinny was telling me the story about this place, I was like, so he's not so different. He made a place out of Ken Grossman's scrap. And if he could just get Ken's scraps, he might make it.
Pretty much.
It's just on a different scale. Like, it was the same sort of feeling.
Yeah.
You should try stand-up.
Thank you.
I want to tell one other Ken story about building the brewery. Ken was our mentor and, you know, shoulder to cry on when things weren't going right and whatever. But he had the most, like, uncanny timing to call us and check in.
Okay.
At the most, like, messed up times in the project when something wasn't going right or whatever.
Wow.
And then, like, an hour later, it'd be like, I don't feel so bad, you know?
Because he'd help you.
He can relate.
He had been through it before, you know. And I remember driving home one night, and he happened to call, and it, like, some really bad stuff had gone wrong and cost us a bunch of money. And I set some in-bed plates in the wrong place. And that happened twice in the project. My mistake was much smaller, thankfully, than the big one that someone else had to pay for. But anyways, he's like, the number of times that I had to, like, rip up concrete and re-pour. And it just, you know, makes you feel better, even though it's, like, on someone else's mistake that happened for them.
Yeah.
And yet I made a similar mistake, and it was very just not gratifying. That's the wrong word.
You need to relate to somebody in these moments, and part of it is because you are hard on yourself for doing something that you think is stupid.
Yeah.
So I'm very hard on myself, and I can think about all these moments during construction of the Hop Grenade, which is a much smaller project, where I'm just, you know, I make a decision, or even if I'm building it myself, and it goes horribly wrong, and you just kind of go, Why, that was a dumb move.
Yeah.
Like, it was, and you can, you know, because in hindsight, you never would have done that, but you did it, and you just went along with it because you thought you knew what you were doing, and it turns out you don't have a fucking clue what you're doing. And you can be very hard on yourself in those moments, and so when somebody that you look up to, somebody who's made it to a place like Ken Grossman, says to you, do you know how many bonehead moves I have made? Right. It just helps you feel human again instead of just beating yourself up.
It's like a validation. Like, oh.
We all do this.
Yeah. Even Ken does things like that.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Like, to me, that's what it is.
You explained it exactly, how we felt after some, you know, pretty lame decisions or just moving too fast.
And
there's just like, you know, and at the end of the day, any project of this size is going to have two or three or four, like, big, like, stumbles.
Right.
Whoever is at fault or whatever, it almost doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter.
But it's inevitable, because not only is it such a big project, and there's just so many moving parts, but we built this from shovel in the ground to opening day to the public was 18 months.
Wow.
So,
okay, that's incredible.
Yeah. At first, Brew was 17 months.
It was fast.
And then they finished the pub.
Fast. It was really fast. Wow. Yeah.
So you are already a glutton for punishment. Yeah. You're going to make mistakes. I can remember being furious, either at a person who had made a mistake or myself, like madder than I've ever been, right?
Probably more mad at yourself.
And usually, yes. Even if it was somebody else, because I'm like, well, I hired them and I didn't pay attention and I didn't do this. All of that was very real. I'm not saying it's not real. I'm not saying people shouldn't feel it. But I do know that now when somebody else talks to me about their project, I'm able to kind of do what Ken does and go, yeah, I remember that. Relax. I'm also a bonehead. Like, I've done, you know, it's okay. And by the way, it's doesn't matter how bad it is, it's still going to be fine.
Yeah.
You're going to figure this out.
Yeah.
And he probably, even if he didn't say all those things, just having him sort of chuckle and go, did that.
Yeah.
Was probably very comforting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah. Yep. I'm glad we talked about this, because a lot of our listeners end up opening breweries. Like, that's just happened over the years. And so everybody remember. We all suck sometimes.
So if you want, you can call Vinny if he gives out his number.
That's
right.
Now,
and then you can call him later.
Yeah, don't call me.
Not just
all my advice happens here.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about this canning line real quick, if we can.
Well, the canning line we installed?
The canning line, not canning line. Yeah. And the reason this came up is I was getting the tour last week, and of course we walk through the whole building, we get to the bottling line. And my question is, okay, well, here you had an opportunity to move on to cans like every brewery seems to be doing. And I wondered why. And you and I quickly got into a discussion about this. Yeah. But, Vinny, you know, the short answer is what? Why wouldn't you? You have all this space. You could do something new. Why didn't you go straight to a can?
And we, you know, we do have room. We could add one if we wanted.
Even but still.
We would never, if we ever did a little canning line or a canning line, it would be small. It would only be to sell in our pub and stuff. But it wasn't on our radar. It was on our radar, but we didn't think about it much because, you know, and we talked about it earlier, our beer does sell fast, and yet we do spend all this money on lab equipment and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
But you'll never be able to get a lower total package oxygen at packaging with a can over a bottle. A bottle will always have a lower TPO because most canning lines aren't done one counter pressure, and you have that giant opening that you have that much more oxygen. Even if you have a bubble breaker, which scrapes the big bubbles off, or you're spraying CO2 as the can lid comes down, you're still getting some oxygen. And then compare that to the little bottle.
So just surface area alone.
Surface area, and then the bottles are evacuated better, and you just inevitably end up with a much lower TPO. Now, long-term, cans are better because once you have the seal, you don't have oxygen ingress, but you do get oxygen ingress through a bottle cap.
Okay.
But, you know, the fact that we're starting at like 17 parts per billion TPO compared to a can that would be, you know, 40, 50, 60, whatever, a lot higher for probably a lot of breweries.
Yeah.
And you know, I have no knock on cans. Like, we drink beer from cans. We yeah. buy, you know, but for us, you know, we believe that we can have a higher quality flavor profile mm-hmm. by having lower TPO right from the get-go because of the cans. Mm. And you know, we can...
And I mean, even though you've gotten to like, okay, so you've gotten to 17 on your bottling line, right? Yeah. And you know for a fact that your cans are going to move fast anyway, so the point might even be moot. I feel like you almost feel like you're taking a step backwards because you're like, well, I got to 17 and now I'm going to go to a can?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, that's it exactly. I was just about to say that.
Okay.
That now, like, we can get, you know, even at like 30, which is... you know, where we were when we started here in Windsor, because we were routinely 30 at our old, on our old bottling line, which is now our funky line. That was normal at the old brewery to be at 30 parts per billion TPO. Mm-hmm. And then we came here and our, you know, with a few adjustments, we're now down to 17 and I think we can get to 10.
Wow.
And you know, from a flavor profile, it probably doesn't matter, but it matters because it's a sign of how tight our brewing process is.
Sure.
The yeah. fact that we can do this day in and day out or week in and week out and month out and be at these absurdly low numbers. Mm-hmm. And yet it would be taking a step back mm-hmm. to end up at 40 in a can. And yet, you know, cans are great. There's a huge market that we can't touch.
Yeah,
with bottles,
and people like
we
them.
Know that.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we haven't had trouble selling. All
Doesn't
of our
sound
gear,
like you need it,
thankfully. Yeah. But Natalie was in Southern California last week, and she was out with Gina, our rep down there, and. Kind of had, I thought was an interesting.
It was really
experience. Interesting.
So I went in, she took me into a couple of accounts, and we went into this little store down in San Diego, a little kind of high end market or whatever. And we went to the cold shelf, which had, I don't know, probably four doors or something. Hmm. We were the only bottles.
Oh, in the whole door, all the doors.
Wow. So talk about standing out on the shelf.
Yeah. Perfect.
Yeah. And I was like, oh. Okay.
This is working.
I mean, there was like six Russian River bottles. I think there were two sours or three sours, and then mm-hmm. the other two
Some
or three
other pint bottles.
And then it was cans, and every once in a while there'd be like a little, like a 12-ouncer here
right.
or there. And I was exactly like, look at that. We stand out on the shelf.
It's so hilarious because yeah. what... It was even 10 years ago, it was the opposite. You'd yeah. stand out if you were the first to be yeah. in the can.
I mean, Oscar Blues yeah. was the first yeah, yeah. craft can.
And 21A came shortly
and
after.
21A,
yeah. Yeah, and they stood yeah. out on the shelf.
Big right.
Time. I'll go on
yeah.
the record again. I convinced Sean to do cans.
You did?
I was like, what? Oh, I hope he's listening.
Yeah. He does listen, yeah. by the way. Sully's a good friend. Yeah, he went cans super early on like
they were,
that, too.
They were right after...
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I remember having
After
watermelon wheat in a can mm-hmm. in Boonville, yeah. like, a long time ago.
And the perfect mm-hmm. beer for yeah. that packaging. Yeah. So, yeah. But again, okay, so if it's going fast, as we all know, with almost any packaging, then, yeah. then we're not talking about a real problem here, except I just feel like it would keep you up at night, even though your cans are moving fast and they probably taste fine. You're like, yeah, but fucking 40 TPO, I can't deal with it. I get to see you rolling around with the 40 TPO.
Yep.
So the only other person who has come on this show and talked about that, and he's a guy who over the years has been controversial, not with my listeners, but with brewers. A lot of brewers don't know how to take this guy's information, and that's Dan Gordon. And Dan Gordon's been a friend of the show since very early on. And, you know, he's not the brewer that hangs out with other brewers. He's not the guy you're going to see at a festival.
Yeah.
But I always thought he was a very smart guy and really knows what he's doing. And anyhow, he's one of the first, only people besides you who's come on the show and said, I don't want to put my beer in cans because you can never, ever, ever get to the TPO as you do in bottles.
Yeah.
It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
And he was so, you know he cares about stability and shelf life, and he's all mostly lager brewing. Yeah, and for me, I had never heard anybody say that, so I was trying to figure out if he's full of shit, if everybody else is full of shit. That's what I'm getting at here. He's the first one who said, until I talk to you.
Yeah.
It depends how soon your beer is going to get drank.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's once you put it in cans, it's stable how it is. Even if it's bad, it's stable.
It is what it is.
It's done oxidizing.
Yeah, but it always could be better.
The problem is that if you have all the small canning lines, I don't think there is one yet. So all the really small inline canning lines are 4, 5, or 6 heads. Mm-hmm. And the problem is that they fill 4, 5, 6 heads, whatever it is. Let's say it's a 6 head line. It fills 6, but it's only got 1 seamer. So the cans seam differently. Exactly. They filled it the same.
Interesting.
Like thin line.
Same,
But it doesn't go like this.
It doesn't seam all 3 at once.
The same.
Right. So the day that someone invents a 4-head canning line that's rotary, then it'll be just like a rotary filler. Mm-hmm. And at least you'll have consistency of how they can. So now the first, second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth cans won't have the same TPO.
Interesting.
Yeah. And so
that could happen the day you want to spend 6x what current canning lines cost.
And they're I saw a somewhat small canning line at CBC this year. But it was still bigger than like what we would want to buy for what our needs are. Okay. You know, for little like 5-barrel batches in our future pilot brewery or 10 barrels from the pub. So that to me is when canning will become interesting. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, can you get the can to a lower TPO?
Right.
Because like you said, Justin, like, well, geez, we're under 20 now.
Yeah.
And
And you've worked hard to get there, and okay. Yeah. Well, and so I also feel like you're a bit like me. I never really say never. I never say never.
Yeah.
No.
I usually just say, not now, because it's not good enough.
Yeah.
You know, or I'm not ready, or whatever. So, in other words, there may be a day that we see Russian River in cans.
Although we never said we'd open a second restaurant.
We'll never say
that. Yeah. Every entrepreneur has a list of things they say they'll never do.
Yeah.
And they always do them.
Actually, that's why I'm careful to never say never, that I do see that often and be like, oh, never that.
So we don't say we never will can.
Yeah,
because
we
probably will.
Yeah.
But if we would like to keep control over where it's sold, and so we would likely can and sell it in our gift shops at the pubs, and we would just keep it at that.
Sure.
So that way we have control over, you know, the packaging and when it's sold, and and hope that the consumer, you know, would consume it.
That's the, that's
until the technology catches up, of course.
Yeah.
Or we get more money. It was that. But, you know, we were really far into the project when canning like really took off, and you know, we had already blown the budget. We'd already committed to this beautiful bottling line, and you know, you get into these projects this size, and you can't exactly turn on a dime. You know, it's like, well, okay, we've spent all this money on everything that we wanted, and now cans are hot, so we don't happen to have $500,000 dollars to buy a really high quality canning line that we feel that would satisfy our quality.
Like, you know, like at Firestone or Sierra Nevada or, you know, Bell's, you know, name any good size craft brewery, you know, those are high speed rotary canning lines, and they are getting exceptionally low TPO.
Okay.
How can we take that technology,
put it on a little,
put
line.
It on a little
affordable scale? Yeah. I see.
And make it to a quality standard, because we are committed to the pint bottle. You know, the bottle that most, hopefully most of your listeners know, the Pliny bottle, and it's a German bottle, and it does a really great job. You talk about air ingress. Well, our crimp is so tight on the bottle, and we have a piece of equipment in our packaging lab that we used to not have, and I would send bottles to Sierra Nevada, and they were nice enough to run them for me. And basically, you submerge the bottle in water, and you pierce it with, and that pierce like needle is connected to a line, a high pressure line that's connected to a regulator to CO2 or nitrogen or whatever, and you crank it up, and when you start seeing bubbles come out from underneath the crimp, it's a test to see basically when your bottle loses pressure and what, or, you know, when it will start leaking, you know, and it's in water so that if it explodes, the glass safe. Doesn't go everywhere and it's safe.
Yeah.
So the first time Sierra Nevada did that, they took it, I don't remember the exact number, but they took it up to like 125 PSI, 150, whatever it was. It was some crazy number.
Oh, they stopped
because they'd never taken a bottle beyond that. They were actually scared.
So I was hoping the glass broke out the bottom before the cap came off.
And then we since bought that piece of equipment, and we have it here, and so we test bottles. And so our bottle is a German bottle. It's a it's a returnable, reusable bottle.
Give me that bottle while you're at it.
And
thank you.
And so we know we have an even tighter seal than the average bottle because of the pressure. Okay. We can crimp it, and you can also crimp too tight to where you can cause issues. So
there's no such thing as too tight. I feel like you have the tightest crimp in the industry, you're fine.
Right, you next know, door,
I have to.
Whatever's legally allowed for tightness.
That's right. Vivo, stop shaking your head at me. Oh. Everything's fine. It's late in the show.
It's fine.
All right, why don't we do this? Because I'm excited about the Beardy Blind Tasting Challenge.
Okay. So am I.
I know you are, Beardy. We're going to take a quick break. We're live from Russian River Brewing Company, the new facility in the new brewery. I hate when I say facility. It's a brewery. The new brewery in Windsor, California.
Good for you.
You know who I learned that from? We were talking about him earlier. It's Jim Cook.
Yeah.
I actually sat, I've interviewed him several times, and every time I make that mistake, he stops me in my tracks, and he says, it is not a facility. It is not a factory. It is a brewery.
And also, it's not product. It's beer.
It's beer. Yeah. He's good at it.
Yeah. Distributors will say, how many CEs, how many case equivalents are you moving? It's like, you know what? They're cases of beer.
Cases of beer.
Yeah.
I like it. We should stick to that. Hang in there. It's the session, and we'll be back from Russian River Brewing Company. Welcome back to the session. Thanks so much for hanging out with us tonight. We are at Russian River Brewing Company in Windsor, California. And wrapping up the show here, but we got a couple of very important things left to do, including drinking some more wonderful Russian River beer. Okay, my favorite tonight, by the way, is... It's the STS, even over the very fresh Blind Pig.
All right.
Yeah, I told you, it goes back and forth.
You know what was interesting today in Sensory was your team. We did side-by-side Blind Pig, we had Blind Pig bottle today and last week's Blind Pig bottling.
Okay.
And I think almost everybody picked last week.
Kidding.
Because sometimes an IPA can be a little too fresh and too green on the hops.
I see.
So you need time to let it just mellow out, almost like a wine goes through bottle shock. So I thought that was really interesting.
So... All right, I'm going to do this because you're here, and we just talked about this on the air. I've been telling a story for years on the show, and I've never revealed what brewery you and I were at, so I don't want to reveal it now. But me and you and Matt went on a day trip in this particular time, and we had a great day, and our host was very hospitable, and we got back to a brewery in the tasting room and tasted his IPA. This was early in my career, so I didn't know how to shut my mouth sometimes. and I taste this beer, and I'm just an honest person sometimes, so I look up and I go, hey, because I had tasted this flavor before. I said, hey, what is it when it's a little plasticky sometimes, like when a beer is plasticky? Do you remember what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Because you kind of fucking saved my ass. Because basically the guy looked at me like I was an asshole, which clearly I was being, and you very kindly were like, hey, you know, sometimes when a beer's very young, especially a hoppy beer, it can display this character, and you were so gracious. And as I'm looking at his face and looking at how you're answering this question, I just remember going like, Justin, you're such an idiot. Shut your mouth sometime. The person had been so nice to us all day, and here I'm shitting on his beer. I was just, I didn't mean to. I was asking it. Okay, you remember what I'm talking about.
Oh, I totally remember. Yep. Yeah, it was you, me, and Matt. Yeah.
Was it your first time having to cover for Justin?
Well, it probably wasn't the last. I'll say that.
Speaking of cover, why are your eyes covered?
I don't know. It's like I'm a listener again. Yeah. I just get to hear you guys.
You just get to hear us.
Yeah. It's really weird.
All right. I'm glad you remember it because
I totally remember. Actually, I've heard you on the Brewing Network on the sessions and tell that story every once in a while.
It just came up again.
And I'll be like, I'm pretty sure he's talking about that day when it was Justin, Matt, and I.
Yes.
Yep. So my question is, was the beer like really just young hops or was it actually plasticky? Because...
Was I off?
I mean, I remember it being phenolicky and plasticky. Yeah. And, you know, this said brewer, you know, would called it an IPA, but it was really a strong pale ale.
Okay.
I'm just kidding. No, this is a really good brewer and a really good brewery.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Which I guess is what made me feel like I could talk about it there, but whatever.
Yeah.
It just came up again recently because a listener wrote in and had said, hey, a brewery recently sold, and I wonder if you're okay to talk. I'm guessing it was this brewery, and I'm wondering if you're okay to talk about it now. And I said, I'm not going to talk about it. I'm never going to reveal who it was. Nope. It was my mistake, and I'm never going to reveal who it was.
Absolutely.
I don't even know who it was.
It was nobody knows. Nope, nope.
Nobody
except
knows.
Me, Matt, and Vinny.
Yeah.
I don't know. Said brewer, who may never talk to me again. Right, I don't know.
Exactly. He never forgot.
Anyway, okay. Well, what we, you know, what Vinny and I were talking the other day and having a couple beers at the bar here, I had mentioned that Beardy is not a fan of hazy beers. And so much so that between Beardy and JP, who's not here today, it's always a thing. Every time we bring up hazy beer, they have to make some comment. Everything's awful. Hazy beer's terrible. And I had noticed at the time that Vinny had a hazy beer on tap. So he also has another beer that you, what do you call it? You had a great phrase for
it. It's our not so hazy, hazy IPA.
There we go.
And somehow, did Sean Sullivan make a comment about it? Was he the one that actually said it? Did we say that it was?
I think the first time we ever posted a picture of a tempo change, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I said it was our hazy, but it was the first time we made it and it wasn't very hazy. Yeah. Sean made some, you know, snarky comment. And
he
was right, because it wasn't really all that hazy. But,
but anyways, now we call Happy Hops our not so hazy, hazy IPA.
Got it. Because why?
All of the aromas and flavors of a juicy, hazy IPA.
Right.
But we spin it through the centrifuge. And I originally... So Happy Hops is an old brand from Sonoma County that the old Grace Brothers Brewery here owned. And then we trademarked it, just, you know, 5-6 years ago. And the first time we made it, it was 100% Mosaic Hops. We were the first brewery... It wasn't even Mosaic. It was 369. It hadn't even been named yet. And Mosaic is actually the daughter or sister to Simcoe, which most people don't know. And it's really cool lineage. And we made it as a pale ale, and it was a nice beer. But, like, you know, the beer, it's Happy Hops. Like, it should be very big and hoppy, and the logo is really cool.
Yeah.
You can check out our website. It's got the little Happy Hop guy, and he's smiling, and he's got red cheeks.
It's super cool.
Anyways, so we turned it into a juicy IPA, but I really wanted to prove that you could make a beer that's that hoppy but still have it clean, spin it through the centrifuge.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't have any trouble with hazy IPAs, although I did. I think I once said I would never make one, and now we are.
Of course.
Make one, and it kind of turned into a cool challenge.
It's that never say never.
So then we recently started making a beer called Mind Circus, which is our kind of our full-time hazy IPA, as much as we can keep it.
It probably
stock.
Goes like crazy.
Oh, my God. Like, we just ran out of bottles today. I actually had to have Bird, our warehouse guy, grab some bottles from the pub because our gift shop here was out.
Oh, no.
Like, oh, my God. We had it on draft.
Oh, just to do this today.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
So, anyways, so now I'll let you take the story.
Now, Beardy, in your defense, what Vinny was just describing about Happy Hops is that you kind of always say, look, you can get all of these things and make a clear beer.
Right.
You can make a wonderful, haze doesn't have to be a part part of the equation.
Yes.
So, which is exactly how Vinny's sort of describing Happy Hops and how he felt. However, I thought it would be fun to make you blind taste both of them and see if you can tell which one is the hazy beer and which one is the clear beer.
Well, I'm sorry to prove you wrong in this double blind tasting, but I'm confident that I'll prove to you that there's a difference once and for all.
You feel it. You're already confident. Now,
this was awesome.
Just to be clear, you can't see at all. I mean,
no.
You already couldn't see.
Right.
But now you really can't see.
Double blind in that I also have a blindfold over my face.
Okay. Are you familiar with either or both of these beers?
Happy Hops and what was the other one?
Mind Circus.
No, I don't think so.
You've never had either one?
I don't believe so.
Perfect. It's getting even better. Yeah. I'm liking this. Okay. All right. So we're going to, I'm going to help you out here. There you go.
One. Where's the other one?
And Teresa's just fucking with you
first.
Now.
I would just put one in each hand so he can.
Right.
Then it's easy for him to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you can take your time. We'll go ahead and talk for you. If you do have comment, if you want to like smell them and talk about that first, you can do that.
Well, let me evaluate them first. You guys talk and then I can do my aroma and flavor analysis.
I do like this.
Yeah. So let me actually while tasting, just talk about the name. Like I already talked about Happy Hops. It's an old Grace Brothers brand, but Mind Circus was a term that our friend Dave Keene, who owns a Tornado, has used, and it's when you lay awake at night and start thinking about business, right?
Oh, geez. I go to the Mind Circus all the time.
See? That's exactly. As soon as he said that, too, I was like, you mean about every fourth night?
Any small business owner.
I was at the Mind Circus last night.
Yeah, okay.
And so we turned it into a beer. And
it's like, on the label, it's like a Rube Goldberg machine.
Exactly. And that's
very cool.
That's great that you called that out, the Rube Goldberg thing, because it was what Jason Robertson, Roberson, I think is how I pronounce his last name. He's Sierra Nevada's former art director.
Okay.
And he went out on his own, and now he's doing labels for lots of breweries.
Oh,
and
cool.
He's done a lot of work for us and with us, and we love working with him because he and Natalie and I just connect. Like, we give him an idea, and Jason just, like,
goes.
Yeah, and he just runs with it.
It's nice when someone gets it.
And so when I explained to him, he came back and was like, oh, you know, like this. And he had, like, you know, the Rube Goldberg. And he sent me like something he grabbed off the internet, and he also had a picture of the children's game Mousetrap, which has a lot of the same thing.
Yeah.
And so we kind of put that together.
Well, so who's the guy on the label? Because it looks a little bit like a beetle.
You know what? I don't know who he used.
A little fellow in the front.
It's a little Sergeant Pepper, yeah.
He looks remarkably like Steven, our production manager.
Oh, maybe
it does
but
look
he
like
doesn't,
Steven.
But Jason doesn't know Steven. And,
it's like a cross between Steven and John Lennon, to be honest.
And when you get close, there's like, you know, there's dollar signs, there's hops, there's you know, pieces of malt. It's IBUs, ABV. I mean, the dollar signs were definitely in construction. That was what we stressed about the most.
You're like,
there's the tent over the head and the Mind Circus and then the Russian River flag.
It's very
And there's a cat.
And there's a cat?
Yeah, there's a cat. And there's a clock.
All right, let's check in with Beardy and see how he's... Have you just...
I already know which one's clear and which one's not.
He's very confident. Okay,
you might have given away a couple of salient clues in your description.
I wasn't listening to that. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Well.
Well, it's not. Sorry.
Well, why don't we let's ease into the calling it
out.
Why don't you talk about the differences between the two that you're noticing?
So before I make a complete ass of myself,
there's no wrong right answer. Wrong answer because I think both beers are good.
Vinny, there's a wrong answer.
Well, it depends. What's the question? What's the question? I mean, am I just saying what I smell and taste?
No. For now you are, but ultimately you're saying which one is hazy and which one is clear.
Okay,
but I don't want you to answer that yet.
Okay.
I first want you to make an ass out of yourself.
Okay.
Or validate yourself. We'll find out.
I guess
That's what are the things that you notice that are different?
So, I mean, I guess it's kind of just rehashing JP and my complaints is that one has a very crisp, you can pick up the high notes of like, here's the fruit, here's the pine, here are
here's the malt versus kitchen sink. Like you get a lot of muddy. It's like you just like are drinking a hop pellet. Essentially.
Okay.
And it's round and even beyond the flavor and aroma, you get like a on your, it's a palate coating kind of just astringency.
It's like a resin.
Yeah,
almost.
A resin just coating your mouth.
Okay.
And you don't get that in a bright, clear beer. Like you can still have it bitter, but it's not, it doesn't linger like the same way.
Okay.
In a clear beer.
Okay. So we're gonna start with this question. Which beer, your left or your right hand, is your favorite beer of the two?
This one.
Okay. And which one is the hazy beer?
The same one.
Oh.
It's your favorite beer, though?
The one in your right hand is a hazy beer.
I think. Unless Teresa mixed them up.
Is it the clear beer or the hazy beer that you're drinking right now?
To me, this one is the clearer one.
Your favorite and the clear one.
I'm testing them just to make sure that they didn't get
because I would do that. I would totally do that to you.
Yeah, right.
I mean, I'm kind of a crappy person, but I have not switched the beers.
No.
Yes, I'm standing by the right one.
As your favorite.
Mm-hmm.
And the clear beer.
The clear beer.
Just to be clear.
Just to be clear.
It doesn't taste as like it. It doesn't have as much chalk. The bitterness is not as coating, lingering, soft, just blown out by round blahness.
Okay, I want to start by saying that you know what, Vinny, I loved you before, but boy,
God damn it,
boy, do I fucking love you right now. Oh my gosh, that's exact. I could not have asked for a better outcome of today's program.
Thank you, good night.
Have the lights always been this bright?
Let the record show, ladies and gentlemen at home, because I'm sorry, we're having such a good time here. Beardy picked the hazy beer as both his favorite and the clear beer, also listing all of the things he does not like about a hazy beer in the hazy beer.
I never said you couldn't make a clear beer taste like a hazy beer. This is sabotage.
I love you so much, Vinny. First of all, I want to say, Vinny,
that was good. Thank you. That was fun.
Sabotage.
You are such a good sport. And to be honest, I thought there was no way. I really thought you were just going to nail it. I just thought it would still be fun to do.
Yeah.
But you know that the asshole in me just wanted this to be the outcome.
Yeah. And it was so good.
I couldn't be happier. And okay, let's talk about the reality. Like, it's kind of a testament to either your brewing, Vinny, or that our vision really kind of messes with the rest of us, because maybe these hazy beers are something great. And those of us who expect to see a clear beer, like I do too, Beardy, by the way.
The one thing I will say is, and I kind of talked about it when we were touring through the brewery earlier, all of us, is that so many of the hazy IPAs, they have amazing aroma and flavor, but they're flabby. You describe it, and they kind of hang, and like they just need like 5 or 10 BUs of bitterness. Mm. And we actually add bittering hops at the beginning of the boil in Mind Circus, so you get a snappy crispness.
What are the IBUs between the two beers? Which one has more IBUs?
The Happy Hops by a little bit. But which not by much. The one on the left, the clear beer,
has a little bit more.
Yeah.
What about the chalk edition? Is it a lot more of a softer water?
It's actually about the same.
About the same?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because it worked for one. And so we're getting the haze with mostly unmalted wheat and oats. And then we're a little bit of yeast. But this bottle has been sitting, so there's probably some in yeast in the bottom of the bottle. As Tommy Arthur texted, he's like, oh my God, you put a hazy beer in a bottle?
Oh yeah.
With a big smiley face. Yeah, like, what is the world coming
what
to?
What just happened? Yeah.
And but that's, to me personally, like if just a pH adjustment, a little more bitterness, just to make it really drinkable and not so flabby. Flabby is a wine term. I had to, Natalie and I had to teach it to our staff. Flabby is a wine term, like a Chardonnay that doesn't have enough acidity. When you drink it, and it kind of hangs on the palate. It's exactly as you described a lot of hazy
and,
beers.
Yeah. And both of these, neither of these beers taste like what I've experienced as the stereotypical New England IPA.
Yeah, right? I hate to say, but you guys actually wouldn't win competitions for hazy beers.
Good.
They're too bitter.
Right. Yeah,
but I like that.
I know, yeah. And yeah. It's a good thing.
I love that. I think they're both in like the 50 BU range.
Yeah.
If I remember, I should have looked up Taylor's lab numbers, but they're in the 50s. But it's just this thing that you know, I've mentioned when you're here before, and I don't know if I said it earlier, like there's this assault on bitterness right now by a lot of you know, young breweries. And that's fine. I mean, that's what makes craft beer so cool, is that it's so different. I mean, look where we came from when, like, you know, when Fritz and Ken and Jack McAuliffe and New Albion started in the industry, you know, there was like 20 or 30 breweries in America, and they were all making the same beer other than Anchor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, until all these new breweries came along. So we certainly don't want that.
No.
But this whole thing of like, oh, this like these, I never like bitterness. I hear that a lot, and I love bitterness. Like, to me, it doesn't need to be like bracingly bitter, but a really clean bitterness. Like you said earlier, like Blind Pig.
Yeah.
I think that's in the low 60 BUs.
Okay.
And yet it's a really clean bitterness. And
you're changing my vocabulary a little bit on this show because I'm one of those ones who will say loud and proud, like, I don't like bitterness, but I think I'm a little wrong. Yeah. I actually do like some bitterness.
And you and Nick were talking about this on one of the hop shows.
The Hop and Brew School podcast.
And he was talking about Cohemulone. Mm-hmm. And low Cohemulone is now, I'm not sure if it's been debunked or not, but I still believe in low Cohemulone hops. And, like, I love Warrior. Warrior was one of the first hops that Jason Peralt bred.
Yeah.
And it was just before Simcoe. And I still use Warrior as our main bittering hop.
Okay.
Although Blind Pig is Chinook, because that's what it always was.
Wow.
But I would say that Pliny has a cleaner bitterness than Blind Pig because of Warrior has a lower Cohemulone.
Is it the same bittering hop in both of these beers?
It is.
It is?
And it's an old school. No, it's actually not. It's an old school hop called Brewer's Gold.
Okay.
I love Brewer's Gold. I'm trying to keep Brewer's Gold alive.
I've only heard a couple. You're one. Right. Yeah. Maybe a couple other brewers mentioned that one.
Yeah. Connor at Cellar Maker, I think he's the one. He's like, hey, you and your Brewer's Gold. Like, you're trying to save the variety. I'm like, I like it. And it's actually not a low Cohemulone hop, but it's not a lot. But what's interesting to me is when a brewer that makes a hazy beer is saying, I don't like bitterness, but still, when you put in 3-4 pounds per barrel, even 2 pounds per barrel into the whirlpool with pellets. Let's say you don't put any hops in at the beginning of the boil, which is really not a great idea because if you want to at least put a half a pound in because it helps suppress the foam and you'll reduce your boil overs. And unfortunately, most small breweries in America don't have boil over protection on their kettles to where it would automatically shut the steam off or whatever. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so you add a little hops at the beginning, will at least keep the foam down. But it just, you know, want that crispness.
Yeah.
And
an actual bitterness, not just a flavor bitterness.
Yeah. And if you add, my point I was going to say was, if you add like 2-4 pounds per barrel in the whirlpool, you add those and you typically let the wort sit for 5 minutes to stop boiling before you start the pump. Hmm. And then maybe you spin it for 5 minutes. So now you're 10 minutes in.
Yeah.
And now you have to let it sit for about 20 minutes normal to let it stop, you know, vortexing and center, you know, and going in the centrifugal motion.
Yeah.
So near 30 minutes in. And then at minimum, you're 20 minutes on your wort cool down. But really, most breweries are 30 or 40 minutes.
Now we're almost, now we're an hour.
Now we're an hour that those hops are isomerizing. So not only are you losing the aroma, although there's a lot of small breweries that are doing some really cool techniques about cooling the wort down and whatnot, but you are also now susceptible to bacteria once you get below 180.
Right.
But anyways, let's say you're
and DMS
surpass
too,
that. Right? Yeah. But now you're potentially in contact for an hour maybe a little under, maybe a little more, and you're isomerizing, and you're easily getting 40, 50 BUs. And yeah, it's a different type of bitterness, mm-hmm. but it's still bitterness. Mm-hmm. And then you think back to Sierra Nevada Pale Ale, it's about 35 BUs.
Right.
Most of these hazy IPAs have more BUs
That's interesting.
Than Sierra Nevada has.
That
Sierra Nevada
Pale that. Ale. Yeah.
So, and yet, and like, I still love Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
Me too.
There's nothing like after like mowing your lawn or being outside doing something, or it's hot and like yeah. Sierra Nevada Pale Ale right from a bottle to
or
me.
A
I
can.
Love that. Or a can.
There are two beers like, in my fridge right now. There's
beer.
A 6-pack of Sierra Nevada Pale Ale mm-hmm. and 2 bottles of Beatification that I picked up when I came here when you guys weren't here. No, not
oh,
even
the
last
first
week.
Time.
When
yeah,
I just
yeah.
made it to the gift shop and nice. I bought 3, so I drank one. I'm holding on yeah. to 2. And Sierra Nevada Pale Ale. That's what's in my fridge right yeah. now.
It's we great. Always have Pale Ale in our fridge.
Yeah.
And still, it's just such a great go-to beer and mm-hmm. it's really clean and the bitterness and but you know again I'm not knocking anyone but
sure.
I do find it interesting that I hear a lot now that I don't like bitterness but yet
right.
hazy beers are even more bitter than Sierra Nevada Pale Ale.
It's a good point. Like I said, you're changing my vocabulary.
Yeah.
Well, and I feel like when you add those old school hops in, even to a hazy beer, it really helps the shelf stability come together.
That's interesting.
We do a beer that's really, it's called Swamp Angel. It's like bittered like a regular IPA, but it's done with a hazy yeast, and it's done with some juicy hops and some old school hops, and it just... It does all the things, but it has great shelf stability, much better than a beer that you're just doing a whirlpool hop on.
Right, yeah. We did a, we have a, our main hazy beer now is Mind Circus, and then we have Tempo Change. Tempo Change is interesting because it's 100% public grown varieties. 99.999% of hazy beers are made with all private hop varieties that are designer hops owned by certain growers. Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
A lot of them owned by Yakima Chief and, you know, Mosaic, Simcoe, Citra, you know, Amarillo is owned by the Gamaches. But those are all private varieties. And I wanted to do something with all public varieties. And so that's how we do Tempo Change, our other. So that's got Crystal, Centennial, Chinook, Brewer's Gold, and the only new hop is Cashmere, which is a really cool hop that's got this really nice lemon-lime quality. Mm. And then we did one other hazy beer as a one-off. It was called CFJ90. CFJ90 was the experimental name number for Centennial back in the late 80s.
Okay.
And so we did 100% Centennial hazy beer. And that was about 3 years ago, 2 years ago. And we're a lot better at making hazy beers now.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to now come back and make CFJ90 again with the techniques we now know that are better. But when we started making hazy beer, we couldn't make them hazy, like Natalie was saying. They would fall clear.
Oh.
It was like, I cannot make this thing hazy.
Yeah, you're so good at clear beer.
How are these kids doing it?
Yeah. I've experienced that actually with breweries that I really know and love, and I go buy their hazy beer. And by the time I pour it in my glass, it's not really hazy either.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a challenge to get that too.
We had 2 batches ago of Mind Circus that just like fell clear.
Really?
We did it identical, exact the same. We still never figured out why it fell clear.
That's
Did it taste better?
Not according to you.
That's right. Well, listen, Beardy, I did set you up with a very challenging challenge. However, I will never let you live this down.
So my takeaway is
I know
really...
you're going to twist this into, well, so you can brew a clear beer that tastes like a hazy beer.
Which I've said before.
Oh, my God.
But my takeaway is that New England brewers just suck because Vinny can brew a West Coast New England IPA better than the New England IPA guys.
Right, we're going to New England.
I'll take that as a takeaway.
We
love you in New England as well.
Yep.
Still, though, I'm probably going to cut out a soundbite. You know how I don't like the soundboard that Moscow uses and everything?
Okay.
I might have to soundboard this one and always be able to just play the button every time you and...
Well...
I so wish JP was here, too. I should have forced him to come. Because it's these two together. Every time Hazy comes up, you can't see it on the radio, but the eyes roll and the comments and the everything. And I'm just like, look, if the beer's good, it's good. I don't give a shit. I don't think that much about it. But these guys do. I wish he was here too. But that was perfect, Vinny. You're amazing. We're just sitting at the bar, and I had mentioned it, and he goes, "Oh, I have this beer that's like our hazy but not hazy beer, and we have our hazy beer." And instantly, I was like, "I'm making Beardy do this."
And also, if we were really scientific, Vinny would have spun this beer in his centrifuge, and then we could really tell.
Yeah, right. Through a three-way taste.
So this isn't really a scientific test. Yeah. So I still stand by all of my recorded statements.
Oh my gosh.
That's fine. This will be the only recorded statement ever anyone cares about.
This will be the first button one on your soundboard.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's been a wonderful and amazing day at Russian River Brewing Company here in Windsor. The cool ship is my new office, so thank you for having us in here. It's beautiful. I'm gonna take some video right now when we finish, so I can put this on our YouTube page and y'all can see the beautiful room that we're sitting in. You can go to RussianRiverBrewing.com. There's probably photos of the entire brewery there,
yeah,
including the open top fermenters that we've been talking about.
Mostly on our social media.
On social media,
so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, we're in the process of revamping our website right now. It's up and live, but there's more, okay, more content coming soon. But certainly social media, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook has lots of pictures. And I'll post some pictures from
I think we have a YouTube
from
tonight. Page.
No. Oh, we have a new YouTube channel, too. I have a lot of construction videos and stuff.
Wait. So did you take the, what you were showing me earlier, was it time-lapse of the cool ship being filled?
Today. Yeah, I posted today? That today that to promote the show.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Can I have it, too? I want to see that also. So let me get that, and I'll put it on our BN stuff, too, because I want everyone to see it. And
that's pretty cool.
I'm excited that whatever you end up labeling or doing this beer, God, I hope it comes out good. I'm just excited. I'm just excited that we were here for it. Right. Like, literally in, we were almost in it.
Right. Yeah. I might have dipped my beard in it when Vinny
was
looking.
No, how dare you. Yeah. He did take the stanchions down at one point, right, and I was like, don't do that.
Well, I thought that was my invitation to do it. They were up before, and then they weren't.
I'll share the photos of you, like, backs, like, waiting.
Doing backstroke across. Yeah. It'll be great.
It's been really a great day. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for coming up.
So much fun.
Yes, we appreciate so fun. It.
I'm now going to party all night in your parking lot.
That's
IRB's
great.
There.
It's fine.
Teresa, thanks for being here. That was a lot of fun, and I appreciate you coming all the way down to do this.
And thank you for the beers.
Oh, my gosh.
Appreciate it.
I
had Steven pick them up, and they're probably already passed out to all the brewers.
Awesome.
They probably took them home. They're drinking them right now.
That makes my heart sing.
Brought some Crooked Lane beer all the way from Auburn. Beardy, as always, you're a good sport.
Yeah, you know, I mean, you didn't embarrass Teresa, so.
She's not ready yet.
That's the next show.
All right. She's not ready yet. This is, what, your third show with me?
Yeah, it's my third show.
I don't start embarrassing until the fourth, at least.
Let's consult the archive. It might have been earlier for me.
Yeah, but you don't count.
Oh, okay.
Nobody likes you, Beardy.
That's still true.
All right, Bevo, good job tonight, whatever you did over there.
I did, thanks.
Yeah. thanks again to Vinny and Natalie.
Thanks.
Share this show with your friends. It's on Google Play. It's on iTunes. You can watch the video of the whole thing on our live stream page. Just go to live stream and search Brewing Network. We got all of our shows are live there. And like I said, go to YouTube and I'll put video of where we're at. Thanks again, everybody. And we'll see you next time. We're back in the studio next week. And
with Ghost Town.
With Ghost Town Brewing Company. Thank you. Out of Oakland or Berkeley, I think. That'll be fun. Although we will still be riding high on this show, I'm sure.
Yes.
From being here.
We'll have just gotten back to Concord right before the show.
That's what I meant. Yeah.
Right.
By riding high. Like
riding high in the motorhome.
In two ways. Like, we're almost to the green belt anyway, so we could be riding high that way. Plus, I will not have left the parking lot if there's fresh blind pig.
Right, exactly.
Right off the bottom line.
Yeah.
Every morning.
Because you all picked it as at 1 week better than fresh.
Right.
You actually need to stay here
for
a week.
Oh. Yeah. And the truth is, even if you want to get rid of me, I know Ramon, and I have a fucking key.
Yeah. So you reminded him.
You made all the mistakes. You hired a friend of mine. You gave me a key. You said, park your RV. You didn't do anything right.
Welcome to Windsor.
Yeah. I'm a new Windsor resident. Yeah. All right, everybody. We'll see you next week on the Brewing Network. Cheers.
JP's an asshole. He's funny, he's balding, he's homeless, and the brewcasters love him, and J guys do too. JP's an asshole. Sometimes he's real funny, we laugh at his wit. The yarn he just wishes he could brew worth a shit.
in my sky and winning the race. JP does great as his charity.